follow the editorial line of newspapers like the one I'm looking at, then you've been told for years that Labour councils have been doing that all along. Is it possible that they are just spouting undiluted bilge once again? But of course what it tells us, because the story I allude to is on a front page, is that they, and you can insert who or whatever you want into that phrase, are getting very, very worried by the increasing popularity of the Green Party. And I wonder whether you can tell me why.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the average energy bill is going to fall by £117 in April. The regulator Ofgem has announced it will cut the price cap by 7%. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband has told LBC it's because of decisions made in the budget.
This is obviously really good news and will be welcome for many of your listeners. It's happening because of the decisions that the Chancellor took in the budget, in particular to raise taxes on the wealthiest in order to fund some of the costs.
Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC he won't stop until bills are down for good. The Prime Minister says he accepts lots of households are still feeling the pressure from the cost of living crisis. You can read Sir Keir's exclusive article on the LBC app. Lawyers for Peter Mandelson say he was arrested over a baseless suggestion that he was a flight risk. The former government minister was questioned earlier this week on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He's previously denied wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Donald Trump has used his state of the Union address to say he'll continue imposing tariffs on other countries. That's despite last week's Supreme Court ruling that overturned his import tax policy. The US president says countries are happy with his tariffs. Tory frontbencher Andrew Bowie has told LBC the UK shouldn't retaliate.
The very last thing we need as a country is to get engaged in a trade war with the United States of America. Look, I'm an old school free and fair trader. I believe that free trade has brought prosperity to parts of the world. And I think that we need to encourage the United States of America to go back to its roots as the bastion, as the champion of free trade, because it makes everybody better off.
The NHS says it secured a rescue package of bone cement to avoid delays to hip and knee replacements. There had been worries that global supply issues could lead to longer waits for surgery. And the man with Tourette's, who shouted a racial slur at the BAFTAs, has given his first interview. John Davidson says he felt a wave of embarrassment and shame after what happened at the ceremony. The campaigner and inspiration for the film I Swear shouted the word during a presentation by black actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 97 points at 10,778. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 17. The weather, a mild day for the south and east of England. Some rain expected for Scotland and parts of western England and Wales. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone, even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
I think we might have peaked already. Having a conversation about the Green Party, it's not the best joke in the world, and it is kind of obvious, but I don't know if you heard the little trail that is played out towards the end of Nick's programme. I suggested what might be coming up at 10 o'clock on LBC, and I said, "It's not easy being green," said Kermit the Frog, "but in Britain, it's increasingly popular." I think we might have peaked. We've got 3 hours ahead of us. I'm not sure that we're going to scale the somewhat dismal heights of wordplay and wit. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Keith. I don't know that we're going to improve on that. It's up to you. It's entirely up to you whether we improve upon that in the course at least of the next hour, because it is Wednesday, which means PMQs will be upon us at 12 noon. And I've got a couple of fascinating guests. Well, Simon Marks, obviously, and another fascinating guest for you in the final half an hour of the programme, but it is to the first hour that I would turn your attention first. We have to tread a little carefully. There is a by-election unfolding tomorrow, as you will be aware, so we wouldn't even be able to have this phone in tomorrow. It is a curious facet of our unwritten constitution, or of broadcasting regulations at least, that when a ballot is underway in this country, you can't really, if you do what I do for it, the newspapers can print whatever they want. They can stick a front page banner headline telling you who to vote for, but we can't do anything once the ballots are open. And that's part of the reason why we invented Mystery Hour, actually. In order to be guaranteed at least 1 hour where we won't be running the risk of an Ofcom breach, a breach of Ofcom regulations, or at least we'll be running a much lower risk than we would ordinarily. And it is partly because of that by-election, but more because of the national political picture that I want to turn your attention for the first time to the Green Party as it is in its current form, led by Zach Polanski. Now, I wonder whether we already have a problem. I wonder whether you are already thinking to yourself, why is it the first time? This party, in its current guise, has been bubbling away with an increasing degree of enthusiasm for some time. I mean, arguably, long before Zach Polanski became leader, but since he became leader, they have begun to reach parts that previous incarnations of the Green Party have failed to reach. The latest polling from tomorrow's by-election, and a full list of candidates is available at lbc.co.uk, it is pretty close to a three-way tie between the Greens, Reform and Labour. And as it stands on the most recently published poll of likely voters, it is the Green Party that is just a couple of points ahead of the other two. Kemi Badenoch continuing, what do they call it, the Kemi-naissance or something, leading the Conservatives to a storming single-figure poll on that, remains to be seen. And it's obviously a moment for reflection, but more importantly, and I hate this, you know I hate this, it's as if I am a dog who is wagged by his tail, even as I hate the fact that I am a dog being wagged by my tail. I hate the way in which the ludicrous right-wing media in this country, the hideously biased cheerleaders for the four donkeys of the Krapopolips, that's not quite, is that up there with the, it's not easy being green? Maybe we didn't peak too early, but anyway, that's a repeat. The four donkeys of the Krapopolips, Boris Johnson, Brexit, Liz Truss and austerity, cheered to the rafters by almost everybody whose name you know in the UK media. There'll be a couple of people whose names you don't know or who you'd have to check in on who were getting it right from the start. But if you are successfully positioned in the UK media, if you are prominent enough, well paid enough, big enough, then you will have probably had to, or you will be stupid enough to have done it voluntarily, been cheerleaders for the four donkeys of the Krapopolips. You'd have been very much in favour of austerity because, reasons. You'd have been very much in favour of Boris Johnson. You'd have been very much in favour of Brexit. And you'd have been convinced that Liz Truss was a political and economic genius. And, of course, those are the people whose names you know. Make a list of all the columnists, all the commentators, all the commentators, all the broadcasters, maybe even some online figures who are on that side of UK politics. And we will be here until next Tuesday. Make a list of everybody vaguely prominent on the other side of UK politics, the people who've been proved right about Boris Johnson, Brexit, Liz Truss and austerity, and we'd barely get to the 10:15 break. We may not even get to 10 past 10, so tiny and short is that list. And so I hate the fact that the people on the other side of the political divide set the conversational agenda in this country, but they do. And sometimes we push back against it successfully, and on other days we can't, because when they start going for something, you realise that it is evidence of significance. Greens plan to hand illegal migrants free house, a wage and NHS care is on the front page of your Super Sore Away Daily Mail today. And you open up the newspaper and you find Michael Gove's ex-wife describing the biggest creep in British politics as someone other than her ex-husband, which is bold. isn't it? And migrants will never be deported under Greens, based upon some documents that they claim to have discovered, but not based upon anything that has yet been established or published by the Greens. So they, and you've even got your own little catchphrase from a newspaper adjudged by Wikipedia to be an unreliable news source. They've written, "Beware the Green Menace." So, look, it could be a slow news day. It is quite a slow news day. It could be evidence that what would we call them? The four donkeys of the Crapopalypse cheerleaders? That's too much of a mouthful. The establishment? What does that even mean? Nigel Farage waltzes around the place pretending that he's an anti-establishment figure while whining about having his coot's bank account removed and having enough money down the back of a sofa to forget that he's bought a house, or his girlfriend bought a house, or he bought a house, or they didn't buy a house. It's so hard to keep up. Speaking of which, we should do a little bit of reform watch, shouldn't we? Just because Henry Riley is on flexi time at the moment doesn't mean that we should abandon our duties to treat reform with the same levels of scrutiny that the rest of the UK media treats the Labour Party. So, I presume this is evidence that they, as in the people that told you Brexit was brilliant, Boris Johnson was brilliant, Liz Truss was brilliant, and austerity was brilliant, and they're now in the process of telling you that Nigel Farage is brilliant, they are getting very, very worried about the Green Party. And I just want you to tell me why. You can tell me why from a positive or a negative perspective. And by that, I simply mean that you might subscribe to the idea that there is a lot of populism here, or rather a lot of popularity and quite a lot of populism. Populism historically being simplistic answers to complicated questions. Or you could come at it from a much more positive angle and tell me that they are refreshing parts that other parties cannot reach. And I don't think I do enough apologising. It's the Catholic in me, isn't it, with the big C. I do enough apologising for the things that I don't know. You might argue I do too much boasting about the things that I do know, but I'm not going to apologise for not having very full and frank answers to this question myself. I can tell you some of the things that I know about the Green Party in its current form. They speak for a heck of a lot of people when it comes to opposition to Israeli genocide in Gaza. And many people, rightly or wrongly, feel that the Labour Party has failed completely to reflect that worldview. Of course, the Labour Party, by dint of being in power, is caught between a rock and a hard place. They can remove pretty much all the weapons licenses that were previously in place for the supply of arms to Benjamin Netanyahu's murderous regime, but they can't cut off all contact with an ally, and nor should they, in my view. A friend, what is it that you say? A concerned friend is a much more helpful position to be in when anybody finds themselves in dire straits than being cutting off the umbilical cord and ceasing all contact. But that puts the Greens in a powerful position while in opposition, because nobody else is speaking up for the vast swathes of the country who are repulsed by what Benjamin Netanyahu's regime has done in Gaza. Just as vast swathes of the country remain repulsed by what Hamas did in Israel on October the 7th. But it isn't a position that you find politically articulated at the moment by anybody very powerfully except Zach Polanski's Green Party. Is that what it is? They seem to be tilting effectively at the gulf between wealth and worker. I don't know. I need more detail. I need meat on bones. But they seem to be articulating that in a way that you might have expected a Labour Party under Neil Kinnock, perhaps, or certainly under Michael Foot to have done. And now you're flirting with the mention of Michael Foot, potentially with populism. Well, Jeremy Corbyn did it as well. Jeremy Corbyn certainly articulated the difference or the gulf between ordinary people and wealth. He did it quite effectively, if you look at some of the polling and the result of the 2016 election. But he also did it without a great amount of substance or meat upon the bones of what he truly believed. For example, even today you'd struggle to tell me whether he was for or against membership of the European Union. So you have a new force in UK politics. It's the second new force in UK politics to emerge in recent years. The first new force, don't know what they stand for apart from hating immigrants. And the second new force, the Daily Mail is trying to make you think, doesn't know what they stand for apart from looking after immigrants. That explains the front page of today's Daily Mail. It's a very simple dichotomy. If you are racist, vote one way. If you're not racist, vote the other. That's what the Daily Mail does every day. And I don't think that's enough. I don't think that's fair to the Greens. What I want you to tell me today is why they are so popular. But and we're focusing on national opinion polls, not local ones. Why are the Greens so popular? And I stress again, come at it from either a critical angle or a celebratory angle, from a negative angle or a positive angle. I need to know more. I don't like the way in where, look, if you want to, do you want an idiot alarm? Do you want to have a little slightly foolproof way to spot an idiot? If you want to spot an idiot, and I'll probably have a couple in Idiot's Corner shortly, you will be referring back to an interview to The Sun that Zach Polanski gave a long time ago, when it was reported that while working as a hypnotherapist, or I think a Sun journalist went to him long before he was a political figure, and she wanted bigger breasts, and he hypnotized her. Not, as I understand it, into believing that she had bigger breasts, but into no longer worrying about the size of her breasts. But it's The Sun, so you can't expect that to be accurately or fairly reported. And if anybody is still reaching for that, it's up there with talking about Gordon Brown selling the gold, or focusing upon something that a left-wing politician did 35 years ago, while insisting that anything a right-wing politician did yesterday should be absolutely ignored and we should all move on. Which is another illustration of the stranglehold in which deeply dishonest media has upon our country and our discourse. Which is another reason why I'm slightly uncomfortable having a conversation built upon the fact that the Greens are now scaring all the usual horses, and that's why I'm talking about it. Maybe I should have talked about it sooner, but it's too late now. We're talking about it today. Why are the Greens surging, and I use that word advisedly, in popularity? Just tell me why. 0345 6060 973. I probably shouldn't have talked about meat on the bones of policy, given that a large number of the Green Party support, or at least the membership, probably lean towards vegetarianism. But I want to move beyond those sort of lazy characterizations and stereotypes. I don't want to get involved in any scaremongering, quite how you could look at what is happening to UK politics at the moment and think that the big thing, the big worry, would be the Green Party is currently beyond me. Who knows? By 11 o'clock, perhaps I will have changed my mind. But I just want you to educate the listener. Not me exclusively, although I will be very grateful for your efforts. I just want to know why you think, or why you know, the Green Party is currently reaching parts that other parties fail to reach. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. It's 10:17.
LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Rob, he's in the supermarket when his phone bleeps. It's his daughter. She's in Manchester at uni. The message is short. She's happy. And just like that, Rob knows every penny he invested and saved was worth it. He texts her back, heart emoji. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Rob's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at vitabiotics.com. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Last year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
19 minutes after 10, and listen, it's the nature of politics. I thought about starting the programme today by saying let's not have a row, but you can't really talk about politics without having a row. And we have our first applicant for Idiot's Corner this morning. Tom in Richmond heard me, as you did a moment ago, say, give me a ring and tell me why the Greens are surging in popularity, and do it from a positive perspective, i.e. things you like and things that you think that they represent, or do it from a negative perspective and tell me why it's a lack of substance or it's a form of populism. So Tom in Richmond heard me say exactly the same words that you just heard me say, and he's texted the programme to say, what an interesting way to set up a debate, essentially saying that you aren't interested in hearing anything negative about the Greens. I don't know if I dwell too much sometimes on Idiot's Corner, but if you hear me say, give me a ring and tell me something negative about the Greens, and some clown in Richmond hears me say, don't give me a ring and tell me something negative about the Greens, you can understand how Donald Trump's opinion poll ratings, his approval ratings, still sort of hover around the 30% mark, or that people who think Brexit was a good idea still manage to breathe and walk among us. You see somebody literally reflecting the polar opposite, or believing they've just heard the polar opposite of what they've just heard, and you understand how Donald Trump's State of the Union address can actually be applauded. He can stand up on stage and lie through his teeth, and people will clap, and you think they must know that it's not true. And then you read messages like that, and you realise, no, they actually believe that it's true. Probably someone who's got the word sovereignty tattooed, but misspelled across his knuckles, or something like that. It never ceases to be fascinating to me, but Idiot's Corner is open early. Simon is in Preston. What's going on, Simon? Why are the Greens surging in popularity? And for the benefit of our friend in Richmond, feel free to be negative.
It's great to speak to you, James, again. Just very simply, really, I'm very much attracted to their taxation policy. The fact that...
What is it? Sorry, I'm going to jump on you now. What is it?
Well, basically, the fact that they're looking to tax at a higher rate... the people, multi-billionaires and multi-millionaires.
Okay.
They're looking to increase taxation.
So a wealth tax, is it? It's not an income tax, it would be a wealth tax.
A fairer distribution, let's say, this of people paying their
way. Well, I can't let you get away with that, can I? Because if you were ringing into a big upper far-right party, I'd insist that you actually provide me with a little bit more detail, then they're going to be fairer.
Okay.
Everyone thinks that their lot are going to be fairer, don't they? I mean, the billionaires vote for people that they think are going to be fairer because they're going to stop rinsing the billionaires.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm fed up of being told that, oh yes, it's trickling down into our economy when the billionaires don't pay as much tax. Well, I'm sorry, it's not trickling down. We know that's an absolute lie. And the other thing is that really gets my goat is the fact straight away the right-wing press absolutely come up with something which is looking to try and undermine the fact that they feel threatened. Farage and the right-wing press feel threatened by this
I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue with you about that. But what are they threatened by? So I'm going to use Google while I'm talking to people today. The wealth tax of 1% annually on assets above £10 million and 2% on assets above £1 billion, which will affect a tiny minority of people and perhaps unless they all emigrate, which is of course what they always threaten to do. I'm still waiting for some of them to emigrate, the prospect of Tony Blair getting into power in 1997, but that's
well,
it.
I know there's job losses on chauffeurs, of course. Butlers are losing their jobs. It's terrible.
But you just like the idea, and I think that a lot of people do, and the engines of the establishment will move very, very quickly to protect inherited wealth or to protect immense wealth, because that is what they're for. Yeah. But you like the idea of looking at the huge... hang on, let me finish this. Because I want other people to understand who, like me, haven't perhaps paid as much attention as you have. Huge fortunes, the possessors of huge fortunes will be required to pay an annual levy of a tiny percentage of their huge fortune.
Yeah.
I like it.
And one other quick point, I'm very worried about young people. I've got three teenage, one in his early 20s, one who's 18, just gone to uni, and one who's 15. And I'm very, very worried about their future, their inheriting with green issues. So, you know, climate change is here. We know it. And I need a party that's going to try and do something to lead the way forward. If nothing else, just to set that example. And there's lots of jobs to be had with green technology. There just is.
But detail, again, can I push you for detail? I mean, it's early days. We're years out from a general election. So if it was a Green Party politician, they could just be a bit vaguer. But I wonder whether you can provide any.
Okay. It's not sexy. Insulating housing for a start off, that would be a starter. The other thing is there's new technologies to be had. It's really, really fascinating. Basically, heavy water is being used in a new development, basically in low level, it's just a small hill. They drill a tunnel down. They use heavy water, which is full of, I'm not a scientist, and it produces energy locally for local areas. So it's part of
local energy for local people. What's not to like? And again, I am going to apologise on occasion for my own ignorance, because of course I'm going to be quite robust with people bringing policies to the party if they can't tell me a little bit more about them, albeit that we're days out. And of course that's not fair of me, is it? Because if I'm saying why are the Greens surging in popularity, and you say, well, I really like this thing, and then I say, well, that's not good enough, give me more detail about this thing that you really like, it doesn't actually detract or dilute the fact that you really like what you're hearing. That's the point. And of course, with some parties that have also upended the apple cart, you just have to hate immigrants, really. And there's not really any further to go on that phone-in. But on this one, I suspect there will be. Let's go. Thank you, Simon. Let's have a look at a couple of texts. Phone lines are open, 0345 6060973. I'm sorry to ruin your phone-in, James. It's simple. Corbyn-style views without all the crazy, weird Corbyn stuff that led to his downfall. Apologies in advance, writes Matt in Northampton, who clearly didn't get the memo that you're not allowed to be negative. Manisha says, it's taken a very charismatic leader to make the Greens stand out. All right, this is something I should probably apologise for, given that I do this stuff for a living. Haven't really got a mental kind of picture yet of Zach Polanski. We've invited him onto the podcast. I'm sure he'll come on at the first opportunity. But I can't picture him like smashing it in a TV studio or the clips. So it hasn't filtered through my algorithms yet. I don't have enough evidence or enough material to agree or disagree with Manisha. And that use of the word charisma, of course, is so fascinating, isn't it? Because we often talk about politicians that are objectively awful having great charisma. How can such a massive racist liar be so popular? Oh, it's charisma, James. Is it? Is charisma in some contexts is just a byword for being a massive liar? In other contexts, of course, it's stardust. It's magic. Barack Obama had charisma. Politicians in this country who have had charisma over the years. Michael Heseltine has charisma. I don't know enough. You tell me. Prove me. Prove to me that charisma is a factor. Junaid is in Chiswick. Junaid, what's going on?
Hi. Morning, James.
Hello.
Yeah. So, I mean, I concur with what the last caller said to some extent, but also, we do have a wealth and inequality gap. And it's how you address it and how that money that we generate would be used, I think. And I think the Greens have like tapped into a bit of a subconsciousness of the nation by talking about this, because Labour are so fearful about talking about it. And this was the case for the last election as well. So if we generated this money from a wealth inequality gap, how would it be used? How should it be used? If you remember, before the last election, Labour had to ditch their £26 billion Green Revolution package because they were too scared of how their opponents would view it or how it would be seen. And now it's not spoken about. And a lot of those policies have gone by the wayside now. And it's a question that they are tapping into how young people feel about the green issues. We could have generated loads of jobs from that the money in British Fold, renewable energy, other things, but that was all shelved, and now it's not spoken about. So the Greens are tapping into those issues, which are very popular with young people especially.
Yes, I'm glad you added an especially, because it's not confined to the young, is it? I quite like this phrase, the engines of the establishment, albeit that it you know, doesn't actually define exactly who the establishment is, but this curious reluctance. I've again, advertising my own ignorance, I've always found the word sustainability to be fascinating in these contexts, because to normal people, that word is a holy grail, right? Sustainability, that's incredible. Imagine if we were getting our energy from things that were sustainable rather than things that were depleting. But of course, to abnormal people, motivated entirely by wealth, sustainability is kryptonite. It's the opposite of the holy grail, because if it's sustainable, then the profits that have been accrued over the centuries, or certainly the last century, disappear. And that's why people like Donald Trump come out with ludicrous phrases like drill, baby, drill, because, and he hates windmills. Who's going to make any money? Once a windmill's built, you've only got to pick up a maintenance contract. Why, who's going to make any money out of that? They hate it. And you're right. I think anybody vaguely intelligent should be able to see that opposition to sustainability is basically just shilling for epic amoral wealth. And you think he's nailed that. You think, why has he nailed that? Because the Greens have been on this particular tip forever. So what's happened? What's he done that has accelerated this process or improved this situation?
But the Germans, for example, James...
Hang on, what's Zach Polanski done?
I mean, Zach Polanski is a great communicator.
Is he? No, is he really?
Well, I think so. I mean, he's come on the political stage, and he's communicated well, particularly with young people who feel a sense of agreement and a sense that the country does have a significant amount of wealth inequality at the moment, and also the fact that other countries, particularly in Europe, promote green issues and have made huge advances. I mean, Germany have made huge advances when it comes to hydrogen boilers. We don't even talk about them. I mean, the investment in hydrogen boilers in Germany is immense. So,
and people are not, I suppose, the younger you are, the less boiled your brain has been by either the Daily Mail or your Uncle Keith's Facebook page, and you're not of the view that, oh, no, that sounds a bit dodgy. Why can't we do more fracking? You just are a little bit more informed and arguably a little bit more intelligent. And if intelligence is an unfair measure, then let's go for emotional intelligence instead. The charisma is interesting. 10:31 is the time. And also the idea of him being a great communicator. I suppose that's the inevitable subtext of this question. How much of the Greens' surge is down to the leader? Which is, I mean, impossible to quantify, but probably quite easy to answer. I should know more about him. I tend to avoid the Sunday morning political shows. Life's too short, to be honest with you, and I get so frustrated at the failure to hold far-right politicians to account or even to remind them of their own words. Hey, you see Farage on the BBC. Well, technically, he's still supposed to be boycotting the BBC, and no one ever points it out. If you're Laura Koonsberg and you've got Nigel Farage coming into your studio after he announced he was boycotting the BBC 10 minutes ago, well, how can the first question you ask not be what happened to the boycott of the BBC? I don't get that. But so it means I'm not watching the programmes in a way that perhaps I did when I was a younger man, or when I was presenting them. So I don't know. A quick show of hands. Is he a brilliant communicator? Can you prove it? I mean, he must be if you think so, to you. But is that part of the reason why? Name other Green Party politicians over the last few years. How well can you do? Just have a little, I mean, apart from Caroline Lucas, which is, I mean, that might not even be an obvious one that springs to your mind. In fact, just do that during the news bulletin. While you pay attention to Lottie Morley's headlines, try and think in your head of Green Party politicians whose names you know. And here is Lottie Morley with your headlines.
The average energy bill for households in Great Britain is going to fall by £117 a year. The regulator Ofgem has announced it will cut the price cap by 7% in April. The Prime Minister has told LBC he won't stop until bills are down for good. You can read Sir Keir Starmer's exclusive piece on the LBC app. Searches at Andrew Mountbatten Windsor's former home, Royal Lodge, have now ended. He was arrested on Thursday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Andrew has previously denied wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. And Donald Trump has told Congress that America is bigger, better, richer and stronger than ever before. The president broke the record for the longest State of the Union address, speaking for nearly an hour and 50 minutes. LBC weather feeling mild for most today with some sunshine, rain expected in the west of England and Wales and parts of Scotland as well. A high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future.
Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:36 is the time. I just had a crisis of confidence there. I was just checking with colleagues that I'm not going mad. It is ridiculous to interview somebody on a broadcast platform that they say they're boycotting and then not ask them about the boycott, isn't it? It just is. I mean, it's absolutely absurd to do that. Imagine if someone said they were boycotting the James O'Brien programme, and then I said, and up next on LBC, it's whoever is currently boycotting the James O'Brien programme. It's a very long list. Keith, you're not allowed to. You're on the payroll, mate. So I don't know, because I mean, a couple of messages coming in giving me pause for thought about what the relationship between Zach Malansky and the media is likely to be, as opposed to what it already it is. But mostly positive contributions so far. Plenty of room for the negative, despite our friend in Idiot's Corner insisting that I had asked you not to ring me with negative views of Zach Malansky's Green Party or negative answers to the question of why they are surging. Jordan says they are the only party willing to do anything about wealth inequality and try to tackle the ultra-rich. Rich says, unlike Reform, the Greens are the true anti-establishment party, and that's why the machine doesn't like them. That's the same message, isn't it? If you think about it. And Jordan writes, the Greens are the only party willing to do anything about wealth inequality and try to tackle the ultra-rich. And Rich says, not ultra-rich, but Rich. It's just a coincidence. I didn't know that the next text was going to be someone called Rich. Unlike Reform, the Greens are the true anti-establishment party. That's why the machine doesn't like them. That's the test. That's the acid test. What is their attitude to epic and amoral wealth? What is their attitude to levels of wealth that are obscene? And the attitude of Peter Mandelson and Reform is, of course, supreme comfort. Reform seem to be lining up to do everything they can to make life more pleasant for the obscenely rich. And the Greens are simply saying, well, look, if we just shave a little bit off the top of your epic wealth and divvy it up a little, share it around, then life gets better for everybody. Now, I have a fascinating relationship with that suggestion. Because it strikes me as simultaneously, I self-evidently necessary, but also implausible. And I think the implausibility is born of gaslighting. I think because of my age and the country and the society in which I've grown up and my exposure to media and my understanding of issues, I think, oh, that's very implausible. they'll all leave the country. They'll all go and live in, under Sharia law in Dubai while complaining about all the Muslims back in Britain. They'll all do this, and some will. They'll all move to Monaco and start complaining about the UK being colonised. But they'll all become immigrants, like Jim Ratcliffe, and complain about immigrants, like Jim Ratcliffe. And it's born also of the knowledge that for many people, enough is never enough. There is no such thing as enough. Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, and he doesn't have enough. He still needs something else. Money has not made him happy. It hasn't taken away the gnawing sense of self-loathing and bitterness that informs his every movement. You could literally give him all the money on the planet, and in his heart of hearts, he'd still feel rotten when he looks in the mirror. And that's tragic, by the way. I'm not gloating. He just needs really, really good therapy. And probably to be kinder to people. And what better way to be kinder to people than to use your epic wealth to do good? But I don't know. Because you say, don't be ridiculous. If you've got £1 billion and the Green Party come for 1% of it every year, you're hardly going to leave the country, are you? But why do you think the image of the boy taking his ball home when he's not allowed to be centre forward is so abiding? Do I need to explain that? Oh. So it's a figure of speech. When someone is sulking, they take their ball home. You cut your nose off to spite your face. It's a figure of speech. It doesn't just apply to the super rich. If you can't get what you want, then you'll stop playing entirely. You will take your ball home. Rather than playing football in your second favourite position in the park, you will take your ball home because the other boys haven't let you be goalkeeper, or the other boys haven't let you be centre forward, or the other boys keep tackling you. Right, I'm taking my ball home. You don't have to be Elon Musk to be that pathetic. We all have it within us to be that pathetic. So the reason why I think it's implausible to say a massive, what's the word that I want? Win a massive policy win to take the wealth tax is because I believe that it would backfire, but at the same time I think it is self-evidently the right thing to do, and that's just one of the needles that I think Zach Polanski either needs to thread, or if you know more about this than I do, is currently successfully threading. 10:41 is the time. Yael is in Ickenham. Yael, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
First time caller, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
I'm going to try and get to the facts because I know you were quite keen to see...
Well, yes and no, Yael. That was a bit unfair, really. We're years out from a general election, and the question is, in broad terms, why do you like them? But if you can provide me with more facts, that's fine. It's not necessarily compulsory.
Okay, so just to focus in on the wealth tax, so my understanding is over 10 million, people with assets over 10 million will be taxed at 1%, and anyone with over 1 billion at 2% annually. Now, that's a very small minority of people that would be affected. Let's be honest, would they even notice that money going
missing? Yes, they absolutely would. I mean, these are the people who buy newspapers and they buy Twitter and they buy all of the organs of dissemination and they buy politicians entirely to protect their own wealth, and they want to carry on drilling for oil and coal mining entirely to increase and protect their own wealth. This is what I meant in that last bit before you came on about the plausibility of it, in that you completely underestimate what absolutely obscene and untrammeled greed looks like. Of course they're going to notice.
Okay, so that goes on to, let's take your point on that, I don't disagree. Let's take that further. These people threaten, these multi-millionaires and billionaires, that they will leave this country, and it's a brain drain. Can we use the same analogy to say, what about the brain drain of people like physios, nurses, doctors who are leaving and going to places like Australia? I am an NHS doctor, a GP,
yes.
And so many of my colleagues have gone to Australia. And we need to also look at that brain drain is affecting our public services.
Why are these two things on the same page? Maybe they're not, but just explain to me the relationship between the wealth tax and the departure of public servants from our country.
So if we tax, it's to do with funds. So if we're taxing multi-billionaires, people who have essentially, let's say, according to what the Greens currently think, anyone who has more than 1 billion in assets will be taxed 2% annually.
No, I know that. I get that.
Yeah. So when we're talking about
the country becomes
funding,
a more comfortable place.
Yes, but where were we? One of the things I like about the Green Party is that they have, in their 2020-2024 NHS policy, they have said that they are committed to stopping privatisation. That's one of their party pledges. Now, what they're talking about is essentially allowing universal access to dentists and GPs, reducing waiting lists, which is one of the topics this morning prior to your segment. And
segment.
I would say
segment. This isn't a segment. This is a flipping genre defying radio phoning. Yeah, I'll segment. I don't do segments. Chocolate bars have segments. I don't have segments. I'm not a fries peppermint cream, for goodness sake. Sorry, carry on. Yeah,
I'm not trying to minimise. I love your show. You're the only one I listen to. So
fair enough.
I think my concern, being on the ground, I think about it from a patient's perspective. There does need to be boosting in staff pay. There does need to be a reduction in waiting lists. We do need to invest in our NHS. And where is that money going to come from? Well, some of that money could come from basically taxing the very, very wealthy. Somebody who has $2 billion in assets paying 2%. It's just a fairer way of taxing. And I think...
But why do people like... I mean, Jim Ratcliffe has already moved to Monaco.
Yeah.
And that's without the wealth tax being in place. So, you know, I don't know how many of them would up sticks and hop it. And there's a temptation to say, don't let the door, you know, hit you on the backside on your way out. But, I mean, what if all of the forecasts are completely undermined by the fact that the people whose contributions we're counting won't be here to contribute at all? And I suppose assets is a key point here, because if the property is in this country, if the business is in this country, if the land is in this country, if the properties, the homes and then that still applies, doesn't it? It's income tax that you avoid by moving abroad. It's not an asset tax. There you go. I'm writing his speeches for him.
You would be good to have Gary Stevenson from Gary's Economics.
No, we know Gary. Show. Gary's been on. Yeah, he's been on my podcast. There's a full hour of us in conversation with each other. And you know, I this is the thing that interests me most, and I'm intrigued as to why you think you're immune to it. In that I love it in principle, and yet I have got in my head the idea that it would be implausible or impossible in practice. And that
why
is
probably. Why do you think that?
Well, I think, honestly, Yao, between you and me, if you promise not to tell anybody else, I think it's evidence that I have been slightly gaslit by the outlets and the propaganda platforms that I spend my life railing against and attacking. I think I have been like a boiled frog. I have been gaslit into a position of acquiescence or obedience in advance. Why? I mean, how do you know it's not going to work unless you try it? And if you try it, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Well, surely it's got to be better than the current situation, right?
Yeah. And what is the current situation? Neoliberalism run wild. Privatisation, deregulation, austerity, minimum government intervention, free market capitalism. I mean, the literal essence of all of the things that have determined economics in the Western world since Reagan and Thatcher, the absolute apotheosis of it was Liz Truss. And we all saw what happened there. So why is it happening now, do you think? Yeah, why is it happening now? Why are the Green Party currently riding much higher than they've ever ridden before?
I think he brings a message of hope. If you mentioned earlier why, you know, you haven't had much contact, you don't quite know much about Zach Polanski.
No.
He is very charismatic on his platform.
Good.
He's on the ground. I think he brings a message of hope. And some people have likened him to the mayor of New York, Mamdani.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put them exactly in the same ballpark. I think Mamdani is, you know, so charismatic. He's on another. He's like, you know, the American version. But I do think he brings this message of hope. And people in this country, psychologically, they're just tired. Morale in the NHS is low. People need hope, and they need a positive message, and that is what he's bringing, and that is what is drawing lots of people, not just young people, lots of people, particularly under the age of 65.
Thank you, Yael. I think that's really helpful. I think that's really interesting, and I think I probably do need to guard against the gaslighting. How bizarre that someone who prides himself on being the doughty and fearless critic of gaslighting and propaganda outlets and right-wing media is probably a victim of it as well. Probably. I mean, particularly on wealth tax and indeed on sustainable energy. How long would it take if we were presenting a different kind of phone-in for someone to ring in and just run through the ignorant tropes that have been very careful? Oh, Gordon Brown sold the gold. Oh, China creates more greenhouse gases. And there's no point doing this. There's no point. Oh, drill, baby, drill. Oh, I love him because he upsets people like you. I mean, so you'd see the big ticket victims of this without sometimes realising that you're quite possibly a small ticket victim of it yourself. I'll say one thing in my defence, or in the defence of anybody like me, and I've got this allergy, I've developed an allergy to grassroots movements. I've found that when politicians, often who are afforded folk hero status by my friends and fellow members of what's broadly called the left, and you actually push them, and I've had the pleasure of doing it myself on a couple of occasions, you actually push them on the detail. You say, it's all very well saying this, it's all very well promising this, it's all very well describing this inequality or this injustice, but how is it actually going to be fixed? Tell me what the nuts and bolts look like. Show me, and I probably wouldn't say this on a stage, show me your spanner, sir. And they often respond by saying, and it is usually sir, I don't know whether that's pertinent, they usually respond by saying, well, we need a grassroots movement to effect change. And at that point, my heart sinks a bit. And maybe that's a problem for me as well. Maybe that's more of a me problem than a them problem. I don't know. It's 10 to 11.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Why is someone eighth in line to their own seventh? We don't need it. I think three, max. One, two and three, that's all you need. Everyone else can be jettisoned. That's because we don't need any more than that. And then they will be forced to, God forbid, go and get a proper job or, you know, actually contribute to their own piles of cash. That might be the way forward, I think. Don't see anything wrong with it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd pay off my mortgage and my mum's mortgage.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. But you forget to pay off those mortgages.
Whoops.
Because you're on a cruise with lots of money.
Money cruise, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, and with free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name. Applies to your bank PLC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is our family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
7 minutes to 11 is the time. Just on that China thing, China still hauls coal out of the ground at a rate of knots, building new coal mines. But China, and I'm no expert on this, it's been explained to me a few times, China plays a long game. China plays generational, centuries-long games. looking at where the world will be in 500 years' time. Do you know, are you familiar with the Kabuki Desert of Inner Mongolia? Keith? Kabuki Desert of Inner Mongolia? Are you familiar with it? If you were to visit the Kabuki Desert of Inner Mongolia at the moment, you would witness an area the size of New York, populated entirely by solar panels. I'll say that again. Well, I don't need to. You heard me the first time. Turning sunshine on worthless ground into valuable clean energy to be sent south. About 500 gigawatts of wind and solar projects under construction in China last year alone. And this leads to a situation in which China can be fairly described as having established a dominant near-monopolistic position in the global wind and solar supply chains. So they're betting on sustainable, while still, of course, cannibalizing fossil fuel. They're looking at the long game, and the long game is sustainable. And you have on the opposite side of the fence, Donald Trump and his acolytes lying about what China is doing, completely ignoring what China is doing, having weird obsessions with wind turbines and championing, calling coal clean, like literally saying beautiful clean coal. And the Green Party, I think younger people who haven't been gaslit either, like completely, like your Uncle Keith's Facebook page, or partly like me, as I'm discovering this morning, they just don't buy it anymore. It's just ridiculous. What are reform doing today? Calling for fracking, probably. I don't know. It's hard to keep up. But it's just so obvious to younger, more likely to be young and informed people, that green matters. And Labour got it in opposition, but they haven't been able to get past these engines of the establishment in power. Done better than many expected, but nowhere near as well as many wanted. Announcement today about the energy price cap coming down. Is it 117 quid for the average household it's coming down by? Imagine what the right-wing media would be doing if it was going up by 117 quid. Imagine what your favourite right-wing radio presenter would be doing if it was going up by 117 quid today. There'd probably be little dents in the desk. But it's going down by 117 quid. And where's the commensurate response to that? Anyway, just an observation. Cam's in Leicester to take us back to why the Greens are going good. Cam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Long time listener, first time caller. Thanks for having me. It was just like to say, to be honest with you, that I think it's a multitude of reasons, not just one, why the Greens are surging ahead. And I'm going to bring out a couple of positives and then, I guess, finish on a negative. So I think the first is that they really, really engage with young people, both in a marketing platform. So, you know, that they are sort of campaigning in platforms such as, you know, YouTube and these other...
Are they? They've got a strong game, have they, there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm 29, so I'm kind of at the tail end of the 30 or under voters that kind of we've seen in polling 35% or so of people under 30 said that they would vote Green. And I think a lot of the reasoning is because people are just fed up with current system. I don't think Labour have shown any difference to people. And I think that's another reason why they are surging, is because effectively a lot of voters are being lost from Labour and going to the Greens. But I think that could also be taken as a bit of a negative, in the sense that those may well be quite easy to sway back.
Yes.
But I think there's also quite a lot of policies that just really, really engage with young people. I mean, I know they've mentioned about sort of bus passes, free bus passes for under 22-year-olds. I mean, that would enable a lot of people to get to work a lot easier, you know, and sort of earn a better living without the travel expenses and everything else that we sort of face in this economy today. You know, the wealth tax that a lot of other callers have mentioned, I think, is a big selling point, and I think it's, you know...
But that doesn't mean it should be. Listen to this from Nick. Greens and Polanski are Brexit for the left. Simple solutions to complex problems. Wealth taxes don't work, no matter what Polanski and Gary Stevenson may say. And they have never been... So sort of successfully introduced anywhere is an argument a couple of my texters have made. I mean, does it matter? If I'm asking the question, why are they popular? it doesn't actually matter whether or not.
I think this is the point, right? You know, why are reforms so popular when they come out with absolute nothing? You know, it's because
how dare you? Apparently, they were talking about fracking yesterday, and I just said that as a joke a minute ago.
Yeah. I guess the point is there is absolutely nothing to their policies. There's no substance. It's just what people want to hear. And I guess this is potentially a negative point of the Greens, is that whilst it is very, very, you know, popular with, especially with young people, there is, it's all a little bit of fluff right now, and that there is very little substance to go with it. You know, they've spoken about their fairer policy, their fairer economy agenda and things, but, you know, there is very little substance to that. So I think, you know, that is where they could, falls is when they start to actually announce, you know, and then face scrutiny for any of these policies that they come out with, you know, including the wealth tax, of
course. Well, I mean, this is going to be the acid test, isn't it? Because Farage doesn't. Farage can appear on a platform that he's boycotting and not be asked by Laura Koonsberg what happened to his boycott. So they will come much harder for Zach Bilansky. Of that you can be certain. He's already getting Daily Mail front pages on policies that are definitely not, at the moment, current party policies. And the lie, for people just joining us, apparently the Greens are going to hand illegal migrants free houses, wages and NHS care, which is going to come as a huge shock to Farage's fans, because they were under the impression that the migrants already got all that stuff, because they've been hearing this lie with a different flavour and a different slant on it for the best part of 20 or 30 years. So what Farage does is just wade effortlessly through attempts at scrutiny in the way that Trump does. It's not hard to pull him up, of course, but modesty prevents me from pointing out how easy it is. But will Polanski, if he doesn't have depth, if he doesn't have bottom, if he doesn't have substance, will he find it as easy to ride the wave of popularity through the demands for detail? I don't know. Is that what people mean when they use the word charisma these days?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he will. I think he'll have real trouble, to be honest with you, in that space when it comes to it. I mean, we all know how brutal the media can be. And I really think he will
struggle.
How pathetic
it can be as well, how supine it can be as well. I think we often overlook that, the ease and the free passes that are given to the very, very worst of our political class are like nothing. You could, Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail not only wants Donald Trump, the convicted multiple felon, to govern this country instead of the man that used to prosecute criminals, but he's also a massive fan of Nigel Farage. So, you know, don't forget when I point out how deeply, deeply morally corrupt and intellectually bankrupt the right-wing media is because of who they attack. Please don't overlook the fact that you can tell even more about them by the identity of the people that they promote and champion. And that brings us, of course, to the four donkeys of the Cropopolips, all lionized by the Daily Mail, all utterly disastrous for the United Kingdom. So one thing Zach Polanski might be benefiting from today is the idea that my enemy's enemy is my friend. It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the typical household energy bill will fall by £117 a year from April. The regulator Ofgem has announced a 7% cut in its price cap. That's the maximum companies can charge per unit of energy for homes in Great Britain. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband says it's thanks to changes to policy costs.
It's happening because of the decisions that the Chancellor took in the budget. We recognise the long-term cost of living crisis that so many people face. We recognise energy bills are too high. We're determined to bring them down. We've got further to go, but this is an important milestone.
Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC he understands many households are still struggling and he won't stop until bills are down for good. You can read the Prime Minister's article in full on the LBC app. The number of local authorities in England looking to impose the maximum level of council tax has fallen this year. New analysis shows 125 councils are planning to raise theirs by just under 5%. That's down 9 on last year. A new travel system for visitors to the UK has now come into force. People coming from 85 countries will now need an electronic travel authorisation. Graham Buck from the Association of British Travel Agents says it's similar to an ESTA needed to travel to the US.
If you're travelling into the UK from a country that doesn't require you to take a visa, you now have to get one of these passes. They're £16 at the moment. It's almost like a temporary pass to allow you to get into the country, and the ETA is valid for 2 years.
Government grants for installing electric vehicle charging points are to rise by more than 40%. Households and businesses will be able to save up to £500 from April. And FIFA's president says he has total confidence in Mexico to stage the World Cup finals and playoff matches. Gianni Infantino says officials are monitoring the situation in the country after disorder near one of the host cities. Violence broke out after a cartel boss was killed in a military operation. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 97 points at 10,778. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 17. LBC weather, a mild day for the south and east of England. Some rain expected for Scotland and parts of western England and Wales. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
The Cupra Drive event is back. On top of existing offers, get £1,000 off across the range, including the dynamic Cupra 4Mentor, the sporty Cupra Terramar, and the daring Cupra Leon. Just order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Follow your impulse. Search Cupra Drive Event. T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New vehicles only. Subject to availability. Saving including VAT apply to the on-the-road price.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 11. I was thinking it's a complete change of direction now, but I wonder whether you will see echoes in this hour, or at least in the introduction that I'm about to inflict upon you, of some of the issues that came up in the last hour. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the fascinating rise of the Greens across the country. And youth was a big part of the answer. The appeal that Zach Polanski has for young people, built upon partly personal qualities and partly, of course, the political realities that young people understand much better than their parents do, or certainly much better than their grandparents. And they would most obviously be inequality and sustainability. The consequences of 30, 40 years of neoliberalism and untrammeled free market economics are everywhere you look. Chocolate in alarmed boxes in UK supermarkets. It's not a cost of living crisis, it's a cost of profit crisis, as one of my rather cleverer texters pointed out a moment ago. Sewage in the water, as another texter has pointed out relatively recently. Look at all the things that are wrong with this world, let alone this country, and you will have evidence of somebody somewhere trousering enormous sums of money and not wanting to share any of it. So I get that appeal of the Greens to younger people. And why? Why would younger people be more amenable to that sort of understanding, that sort of comprehension, than older people? Oh, I tell you what, I think these do sit next to each other really effectively as well. Let me explain. The Bank of England's chief economist has revealed that his own daughter, and I don't know that she is going to thank him for this, is among the hundreds of thousands of young people struggling to find work as a jobs crisis grips Britain. Hugh Pill is his name, and talking about the current landscape for young people, he told a House of Commons committee, "I very much share your concern about unemployment, particularly for the younger people. I have a daughter looking for a job, so this is a very immediate experience for me personally as well." And he then goes on to critique some of the changes around tax and the national living wage and the effect that they have had on the 16 to 18 and the 18 to 21 age groups, because some of the special lower rates have seen people move up the ladder. The youth unemployment is now at the highest rate in more than a decade, with 16% of 16 to 24-year-olds who are looking for work out of a job. Now, the other story that I think is deeply relevant to this statistic is about graduates in particular. And it's John Byrne Murdoch, the patron saint of brilliant statistical analysis, who, like most of the best journalists in this country, works for the Financial Times. He has identified that none of the problems blamed for low graduate employment, and this is going to come as something of a shock to you, particularly if you have a young person in your life, or if indeed you are the young person currently caught between this Scylla and Charybdis. It's not happening in other developed countries. So let's run through the reasons given. Economic inevitability. Why are graduates not getting work? It's doubled since 1999. 41% of Britain's workers have a degree. So this is one of the arguments. So we've got too many graduates. If you increase supply, then you reduce earnings. You want to be a little bit more nuanced about it, as John Murdoch explains, then you're explaining that university education serves to signal who the most skilled people already are. So expanding participation dilutes the average skill level of graduates. This is a very popular right-wing view. We've got too many graduates. That's why we've got graduate unemployment. It's not true. It's one way to blame the consequences of rampant profiteering on Tony Blair. But it's not true, because the graduate earnings premium in Britain has eroded during the expansion of higher education, whereas in comparable economies like the United States, the Netherlands, Spain, Canada, France, the opposite has happened. The graduate share of the workforce has grown at a similar rate, while the graduate earnings premium has also stayed the same or grown, except in the United Kingdom, where between 1997 and 2022, it has plummeted. Worsening graduate fortunes are a particularly British problem. And it is down to weak productivity growth and poor economic performance more broadly, which is linked to, of course, in my humble opinion, the way in which neoliberalism has not had any breaks on it at all in our economy. But that's not, I don't want to confine the conversation to graduates. I want to have a really weird conversation with you today. And a very, very uncomfortable one. I wonder whether this story, there's two stories. There's the one about graduate employment. There is the chief economist at the Bank of England bemoaning the fact that his own daughter can't find work. 740,000 people in this age group want a job but are unable to find one. For graduates, it's a peculiarly British condition in which they find themselves. Falling birth rates. There's so many elements of this that are fascinating. The UCL Centre for Longitudinal Studies has looked at data from about 10,000 people taking part in the millennium cohort. If you're a millennial, so remind me what the decade range, remind me what the year range is for millennials. When do you have to have been born to be a millennial? If you're a millennial, then about one in four, this is extraordinary, about one in four millennials had children at the age of 23. The figure now for Generation Zers is 1 in 10. So you're less likely to have children as a consequence of feeling less secure. Listen, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm dancing around this because it's a weird question. And it's not one that is going to be very easy to answer immediately. But I want to get a phone in out of it. So I need you to have a little think. And I need you to think about your own life or the life of the young people in your life. Because I have a theory, and I don't like it. But you know what I do. I spend the day talking with you about the news, and my entire job these days consists of looking at the changes that are going on in our society and examining them with you. And I think something really big has broken. I think this might be part of Zach Polanski's appeal to a generation. And Yalin Ickenham made this point about it's not about what Labour does. Labour is trying to manage, you could call it decline or the status quo, whichever you prefer. It might be the same thing. What if the status quo is decline? Labour, under Keir Starmer, is trying to manage the status quo, to make incremental improvements in parts of the bigger picture. Zach Polanski is currently promising revolutionary change. He's promising to tear up the old system and do things very differently. And somewhere between those two poles lies a really interesting point, a really interesting social development that speaks directly to young people. And that is this. And remember, I'm a parent of teenagers. Actually, my oldest isn't a teenager anymore, would you believe? But I'm a parent of people very much in this catchment area, although they're both in full-time education for now. The relationship between effort, education, and security has been completely destroyed. You no longer know that if you put in the effort and you avail yourself of education, then you will be okay. Now, education is a smaller element of this than effort, of course, because it is not a conversation that I want to confine to graduates. Also, people who haven't gone to university, people who stopped their formal education at 16 or 18, struggling to find work. But you would once have been able to find work through effort, by dint of your work ethic, by dint of your determination, by dint of your skill set. It's a relatively modern phrase, but not an awful one. You would have found security. Security through work was within the reach of almost everybody. Listen, there were times when it wasn't. Early days of Thatcherism, 1 in 10 on unemployment benefit, as UB40 so powerfully remind us. But the relationship between effort, education, and security has broken. And I just want you to tell me whether or not you agree, actually, and then provide your reasons for agreeing or disagreeing, of course, because there is no earthly way that 740,000 young people fit the lazy stereotype narrative of right-wing colonists. There is no way that these people are all faking mental health problems or waiting to become influencers or dreaming of the day they get onto Britain's Got Talent and become the next Elvis Presley. It's 740,000. And, you know, depending on how you dice the numbers, you're looking at around 1 million young people who just aren't biting. The cogs aren't meshing. And it's profoundly offensive to blame them for this. I mean, of course, being profoundly offensive and incredibly lazy has never stopped a right-wing commentator before, and it's unlikely to stop them now. But this is not a crisis among young people. This is a crisis being done to young people. And I want today, or I'm trying at the moment, to dig into this crisis, to look for something big. Because I've looked in the past for not quite anecdotal, but yeah, maybe anecdotal. And the phone-ins, do you remember I said to you, they're not working. These phone-ins aren't working. I'm fascinated by this cohort of people, this cohort of young people. How can they not be working? How can you be 18, 19 years old and still living at home? A great headline in the Times this week, Generation Z can't grow up. They can't grow up. They've got a falling birth rate. Fewer and fewer people actually leaving the family home. 68% of Generation Z people, that's people born between 2000, well, I'll get the numbers for you in a minute, 68% of them still living with their parents at the age of 23. That's three times the proportion of millennials who are, at best, 10 years older. Can't have children, can't leave home, can't get work. And it's not their fault. We are not equipped as a society to recognise the fact that it's not their fault. We have to blame them for it. It's because they're lazy. It's because they're all faking ADHD. It's because they're all lefties. It's because they're all they all want to be influencers. It's because they all want to be David Beckham, or they all want to be footballers or pop stars. It's so evil, that narrative. A horrible feeling. I might have fallen into it a little bit myself, which is why my phone-ins didn't work. What is almost saying, what's wrong with these people? Why are they stuck at home doing nothing? How can anybody be stuck at home doing nothing in 2026? And the answer is that the relationship between education, effort, and security is broken. the way in which, for generations, certainly since the end of the Second World War, if you get the education and or the effort, then in return you get the security. Here is my contribution to society. I am educated and or I am effortful. I am capable and willing of work. And I'm educated. Please reward me commensurately. And the reward is, it's unfair and it's skewed, and if you went to a school like mine, you'll get much bigger rewards than you would if you went to a school like yours. Well, not yours, you might have gone to my school, but you take my point. Would be at least security, parenthood, the prospect of property ownership. If not property ownership, then social capital. And now I look at my daughter's generation and I see education and effort no longer being passports to anything. And that, for me, is the only way in which I can understand how 740,000 people, young people, are currently out of the loop, who are stuck, who can't leave home, who can't start families. The only way you can understand it is because they have the education and they have the effort, but it doesn't get them anything in the modern world. This is probably the single most important issue facing our population today. Hey, but hey, look over there, small boats. It's probably the single most important issue facing our society today. And many elements of it are peculiar to Britain. This is not a global phenomenon. Many elements of it, particularly for graduates, are peculiar to Britain. What the hell's the phone in? So I now understand why asking you what's going on with these kids who aren't doing anything did not produce the kind of answers. You know what? Am I a perfectionist when I'm on the radio? It drives me nuts when we do a phone-in that doesn't quite work. And it drives the producer nuts. That it means I want to come back to it again and again and again. Other people would say, well, that didn't work. Let's not go there again. I say it has to work. 740,000 young people are out of the loop. And it didn't work as a phone-in. That's me getting it wrong. That's me not working hard enough to understand what's happening to our young people and to our country. I need to understand it to get you to tell me what's going on in your life. I need to describe accurately the engines that are driving this social change. And I think I finally worked it out. And I'm very cross with you for not telling me sooner. I think it's really simple. So here's an admission, right? My dad prioritised my education over pretty much everything else, including the material comfort of my family. We could have been a much more material... We weren't skint by any stretch of the imagination, but if he hadn't sent me and my sister to the schools that he sent us to, my mum and my dad, they were in it very much together, then we'd have had a bigger house, we'd have had a fancy car, we'd have gone on lovely holidays, all that kind of stuff. They were among that class of private school parents who are genuinely making decisions. You can't have both. You can't have the house and the education for your kids. You can't have the car and the education. So my dad valued my education over money. Rather than having money to give me when I left school or graduated or when he retired, and saying, here's a trust fund like some of my rich friends had, or here's a check to help you buy your first flat, here's a deposit. There wasn't any money. They'd spent it all on our education. And I have done the same for my children from a position of a little more healthy financial position. But if you could press fast forward, what would you give them? Now, would you give them the education that money can buy, or would you give them the money when they hit 21? And I think I'd give them the money, because I don't think that the education or the effort matters like it did when I was their age, or when you were their age, or when flipping generation, when millennials were their age. I think that the relationship between education and effort has broken. Absolutely extraordinary to think that something so absolutely epic explains something so awful. Am I right? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Education plus effort equals security or success. True or false? 0345 6060 973. That is no longer true. And that's why 750,000 young people are out of the loop.
This is LBC.
When an offender is released, The probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Danny Dyer's Proper Deal Hotline.
Danny, I'm on a date. It was all romantic.
Right.
Now the movie's buffering. The screen's frozen.
Oh, nothing kills the mood like a spinning wheel. Switch to Skyfall Fibre 150. It's proper fast and streams smooth as silk.
Oh, I could kiss you.
Go on, you smooth operator. Switch to Sky Broadband for £24 a month. Sky's lowest ever price. And get up to £200 towards leaving fees.
Price will increase by £3 a month from the 1st of April 2026 and may change during 24-month minimum term. Offer ends 11th of March. Switching credit with proof of leaving fees paid. Terms apply.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at knockout.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's not a normal phone in this. I've told you something, and it's a bit weird. It's a bit out there, and I think it's true, and I just want to know whether or not you agree. I should probably be asking other questions, like how do we fix it and why has this happened? So if you were born between 1981 and 1996, you are more than twice as likely to have had children at 23 than you are if you were born in the next generation, if you were born as a member of Generation Z. And the you're less likely to leave home, you're less likely to have children, you're much less likely to have a job. And the reason is that the relationship between education and effort and then security and success has broken completely. Tell me I'm wrong. Graham's in Wimbledon. Graham, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hi. Usual first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on. I kind of feel like you're completely right. I'm in complete agreement. I feel like the current situation is a product of like the debt economy that we've kind of all grown into. We're all completely reliant on debt to fuel lives now.
But that's been true for decades.
Indeed.
So does it explain 740,000 young people who don't have any debt because they can't get any earnings?
I think it's not the single answer, but it's certainly part of the issue.
Tell me why.
House prices. It used to be the case.
Yeah, but we're not talking about people in jobs who can't buy houses, Graham. We're talking about people who can't get a job.
Okay, that might be slightly different then.
That's the whole phone. 740,000 young people who can't get on the bottom rung of whatever the ladder is of society, the ladder that leads to property ownership, the ladder that leads to parenthood. Those numbers are plummeting. The ladder that leads to security and or success. It's not that. I mean, it's not a criticism of you. I think it is hard to work out precisely what the reasons might be, but it's not that. And property prices explain why people with jobs can't get on the... But that's a phone-in we've done and dusted many times in the past. This is about the 740,000 young people, give or take a million young people, who can't get on the ladder of life, as we would once have called it. And that has to be because the stuff that we thought mattered, education and effort, doesn't matter anymore. Leona is in Tring. Leona, what would you like to say?
Hello. Hi. Firstly, I do totally agree. I think education and effort doesn't necessarily promise you what we would have been promised
yeah.
Years ago. But I also think in terms of their security or their ideas of security, I think their access to very instant information, not governed just through the media, allows them a kind of wisdom that they're not promised, they're not believing in the promise necessarily of the government, where we in, you know, however many years ago, would have just taken all the information that we get through the media, which is very much, you know, through the government.
Well, it's not. To pause you briefly, I don't know how much attention you've paid to the media in this country lately, but they're sworn to the destruction of the current government.
No. But there are far more opinions now that they have access to, far more information, I think, that does give them that lack of security.
I'm being a bit thick. I apologise. I don't quite understand what you mean. Talk to me about your own children. What do you think has happened to them that explains their what it is you've just described? You don't need to be vague. Just specifics relevant to them.
For example, my 21-year-old, I think, doesn't believe in the promises of most of the governments, actually.
Because there are 740,000 people who are not getting started in life. And when we were young, you would get started in life. So I mean, it's not the exposure to myriad opinions that explains his disillusionment. It's the reality of the world he inhabits that explains his disillusionment, surely.
Yes, it is their reality, but they're also getting access to a lot of other people their age. So they realise it's not just them.
Yeah.
It's not just them in that position.
It's not. There's 740,000 of them.
Yeah, but...
I sense that you've got something in your mind that you think is really true, and yet you're reluctant to tell me what it is. I could be wrong. It might be just a bit nervous to be on the radio, but... of course, so am I. But you're just telling me that they know they're not alone in a phone in about 740,000 people. What are the opinions you're talking about? Is that what you don't want to tell me? There's stuff that your son is accessing online that is a big part of who he is today, and I don't know. I don't know.
I just think they know a lot about the world and what is going on around the world.
Right. I don't know. That's why I keep saying what.
Okay. A separate issue. This isn't even answering your question.
You're telling me.
Yeah. More to the point, I do agree that the effort is not there. But the response...
Lottie Morley has the headlines.
The Prime Minister has told LBC he won't stop until energy bills have come down for good. The regulator Ofgem has announced it will cut its price cap by 7% from April. It means the average household bill in Great Britain will fall by £117 a year. You can read Sir Keir Starmer's piece in full on the LBC app. A man has been arrested for allegedly entering a mosque carrying a weapon during Ramadan prayers. Officers were called to reports of two people acting suspiciously at Manchester Central Mosque last night. And Aston Martin is planning to cut up to 20% of its workers after seeing annual losses widen. The luxury car makers proposed hundreds more job cuts to save around £40 million. LBC weather feeling mild for most today with some sunshine this afternoon. Rain expected in the west of England and Wales and parts of Scotland with highs of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. from real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
People are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
As a business owner in the South East, you're full of potential, and so is your business. But to grow, to get somewhere new, you've got to try something new. So look around you. There's no better time than now to invest in a bright young T-level student. They'll inject fresh ideas and perspectives into your business, no matter its size. So go on, try something new.
It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Caterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears, and four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood, and Cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park. The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com. Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 973.
Potentially terrifying, this. I might not open this Pandora's box again for a while, because you remember the typical teenage response to being told what to do. Well, maybe not typical, but, you know, I was one of them. What's the point? What's the point? What's the point of homework? What's the point of Pythagoras? Why should I? And the response to that would be, well, the reason why you need to do X, Y, and Z is because one day it will lead to A, B, and C. So if you want to be secure in life, if you want to have your own home, if you want to get married and raise a family and have children, you want to be able to have nice things, you want to be able to go on holiday, then you need to work hard, or you need to do your best, or you need to put the shift in, and then society will, if not reward you, then it will accommodate you, it will recognize you. You want to know why 740,000 young people can't, not won't, but can't get on the bottom rung of the ladder? The answer has to be that something massive has changed. Could it be COVID? Could COVID be part of it? Or is it just that we haven't been paying enough attention to what's been going on in the world, and we've sat idly by while the engines of our society have wound down? Sophie's in Southport. Sophie, what's going on?
Hi, this is the first time I've ever rang. Super nervous.
Me. I think that, and as you heard with the last caller, I'm a model of patience and decorum, Sophie, so fill your boots.
This is why I rang, because I heard the last caller and I thought, no, I really feel like I know the reason for this. Good. In my day, you used to be able to start at the bottom and you used to be able to work your way up. You used to be able to go and create a future for yourself. You used to be able to go to the anywhere you wanted, and you could walk in that door and you could sell yourself. Now all that's happening is you pass around pieces of paper. I mean, we can't even get a job unless we've got a CV to pass around, or we've got some education on a paper. But there isn't any jobs for that level anymore. Everyone was told that they were supposed to be solicitors and that they were supposed to have these great grand jobs, and no one cared about the vocational jobs, and no one cared about the factories were all closing down and all the businesses were all closing down, and there was no growth. There was nowhere for you to grow and
but
feel
this,
like
this doesn't
something.
Hold true across all the other Western economies where exactly the same things have occurred. So particularly on the graduate front, which is what you must be talking about if you talk about lawyers an accountant. So, you know, is university still worth it? Being the question that is often asked.
Well, absolutely not, though.
No, but it is everywhere else.
Now, isn't it?
It is everywhere else. It's only in the UK that this graph has plummeted downwards since 1997. Everywhere else, it's gone up.
But if you look at the governments in your Scandinavian countries, they respect their youth. They think that
what does that mean? What does that mean?
well, they either give them the respect. Here, there's no respect for anybody. We've forced parents into a position where they cannot, literally cannot live without both parents going to work.
Yeah, but this is true everywhere, Sophie. This is true everywhere.
Not in the Scandinavian.
No, it is. I promise you.
The
Scandinavian model just—it's better on shared parental leave and it allows each parent to leave work a little bit early to do the school run. It accommodates the necessity of two parents working. It's not a model of one parent working and one parent staying at home.
When you were younger, was your mum
there? Just gloss over what I just said, because the Scandinavian model doesn't support your argument.
I'm not glossing over it, but I think that's fundamentally the cause of the knock-on effect that's what's happened now.
Okay,
so
it's true in all the countries. It's true in the countries that haven't got the problems that we've got, that two incomes are now pretty much a prerequisite for getting ahead. So why are there 740,000 people here who can't get on the bottom rung of the ladder?
Because our government hasn't brought the jobs for them to go to.
What sort of jobs?
The jobs that they've pushed them into the corners to say that all children had to be something of a higher quality. They've pushed them to the fore.
92% in America, college graduates earn 92% more than non-graduates. It's up 80% on what happened in 1996.
In America, homeschooling has become a phenomenon that they couldn't.
38 minutes after 11, I think I may have been celebrating prematurely on having finally found a way into unravelling this mystery of our ages. Ben is in Glastonbury. Ben, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. This has been something that's been on my mind since various phonings, all the ones you've tried.
It's bubbling under the surface of a lot of conversations that we've had. But I felt, before the last two callers, that we were finally getting close to comprehension. So the pressure is on you, Ben.
Okay, so it's an angle, it's a facet of this that isn't an answer, but it's something that strikes me from experience that we're not talking about. And that's the fact that, so my son is 23. He's, you know, struggling to get work, even though he's got little jobs now. But the commonality, this is what strikes me. Back along, you mentioned in a phone-in, what have all these kids, 750,000-odd, got in common?
Yeah.
And that is this. The answer is that they can stay at home. They can, you know, not be in education, work and training, because we as parents enable them to do that. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good or a bad thing, because we want the best for our children. But I think there are less fortunate kids out there who are probably laughing at this phone and going, haha, you know, I have to go out and earn my low-paid work because my parents can't support me. They can't put me through.
But they're still living at home as well.
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're a lot more likely to find their way into something by just going out there and doing it. And there's a lot of kids like my son who is actually a lot easier for him to just not, you know, he loves his computer games, for example. There's a lot underneath it. You know, he's a particular case where he has a gaming addiction, essentially.
So it's
easier for him.
Kind of blaming it on well, who are you blaming yourself or are you blaming
yeah,
him?
Yeah, I am really, because in a way, I think, like, you know, I feel like when I was raised, it was more, you know, I've got the most unique job in the country and I'm blessed and it's wonderful. So I can't really relate that to his situation. However, he does have qualifications. He's got wonderful qualifications. He could go out and get a high-paid job tomorrow, essentially, as a HGV driver. But I enable him not to.
And is that class? Is that partly status linked? You don't want him to be driving an HGV?
No, not at all.
What is it, then?
I feel like...
You're holding out for him to get a job commensurate with his background and education?
Yeah. But basically, I think the only thing that's going to force him to face that world on and do it and realise that he can do it is for me to say, mate, there's the door, go and do it.
But that never happened to you.
Well, it
no, it really exactly did. You're like me. Are we a similar age?
What am I this year? I'll be 45 this year.
Oh, you're nearly 10 years younger than me, but you're mythologizing your youth, mate. Your parents did not tell you that you had to go out there and shovel soil or you'd starve.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see that.
And you went out and you looked at, where was I reading earlier today? I think it was Simon Mills in the Times. You went out and you looked at what you could earn for doing what was relatively...
Well, yes, no. Yes,
no, you did. You did. Well, I did. I could go and work in a shop and I could have a nice life.
The roots worked back then. I earned very little for many years. But
even when you were earning very little, you could go out at the weekend, you could go to the cinema, you could probably afford a holiday, you had nice clothes.
True, but I think the commonality is, between all this group, is that they're able to not do anything. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But essentially, there are. I know other parents who are in the same situation. They've got their kids.
But my inbox is full of people who are desperate to work, and the jobs are not there. And you can say, well, go and do this and go there. Okay, here's the thing, Ben. Explain this to me, all right?
Yeah.
There is a massive shortage in this country of scaffolders.
Yeah.
Why?
Probably because nobody wants to do it.
Well, hang on, there's all the kids who've got no choice because they're from poorer backgrounds. They're going out and doing a shift and sweating away. How come there's no scaffolders in this country? There's a massive shortage of scaffolders.
Probably because I think that we're pushing too many kids towards... I mean, it's not glamorous, is it, saying, come on, son, I want you to be a scaffolder?
Good money. Hard work. Yeah, I'm just pointing out. I'm pointing out that your answer is inadequate in the context of loads and loads of people who aren't from comfortable backgrounds or who haven't got compliant parents are cosseting their kids, while the rest of them, the ones that live in an even more real world, are going out to do all the hard jobs immediately. I don't know why there's a shortage of scaffolders, actually, but it puts a bit of a fly in the ointment of all of the answers to the question that I've been asking today. I've been fascinated by scaffolding for years. Absolutely fascinated by it. Not with a view of wanting to do it, but just in a view as to what an extraordinary hard job it looks like. Susie's in Montrose. Susie, what would you like to say?
Oh, yeah. I'm just... Well, this is my first time, so I'm a little bit nervous.
It's only me.
Just bear with me.
It's only me.
I've got three children. Eldest 30, youngest 23, and a middle one. Now, you know, I have had to really fight with all three of my kids about going out and, you know, getting a job, and this whole mentality of it's so long, you know, I can't do it because it's long, because they wanted me to do A, B and C instead of just A. There's this high expectancy, this high gratification that they all have now.
You can only speak for your own children. You can't speak for all. So where did that come from? Whose fault was that?
That wasn't anybody's fault.
Well, where did it come from then?
It came from a culture of people that are grown up with the internet, and they get instant gratification in so many other areas.
So what sort of jobs?
Hang on a second. The long game.
Yes.
For them is pointless. Why would I go and do that when I could do... But, you know, you speak to most young people in their early 20s, late teenagers, and they've all got a side hustle, because that's the only way for them to move forward, to get any kind of money. And 9 times out of 10, it's probably not legal.
I'm just going to press pause now, because I mean, there's quite a lot of generalisation here. 740,000 young people,
I'm not saying 740,000.
I'm finished. You did. You said 9 times out of 10, and I'm talking about 750,000 people. Okay. So the idea that they're all criminals is palpably ridiculous.
No, I'm not saying they're all criminals. But
you just did. You just said 9 times out of 10. It's illegal.
Some of them.
Oh, for heaven's sake. This is one of those days, isn't it? Okay, here's the question. What are the jobs that your three children think are beneath them? The kind of jobs you think they should be doing, but they're not.
Just average jobs.
Like what, though?
You know, working in a supermarket, working in a factory.
And how do they pay their way?
In the morning.
How do they pay their way in the absence of an income?
Well, they live off me. That's right. Why I had to. That
but
is
it's
why
nobody's fault.
I had to. No, that is why I've had to say, no, it's time now for you to go out and do the whole growing up thing.
And what happened then? What happened when you said
that? And they've gone out and they are doing it now, and they're finding it really, really tough. And they are, and they don't talk to me because I pushed them into it.
Well, they probably can't get a word in edgeways. It's 11:46.
LBC this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Ed Miliband, Secretary of State for Energy Security and Net Zero.
I hear what you're trying to do with energy bills. We've got security blocks on chocolate and cheese. What are the government doing about that?
Ever since the financial crisis of 2008, people have been facing a long-term affordability crisis.
Do you know the price of a Mars bar?
I'm not going to get into a quiz questions with you.
Politicians are so removed from reality.
I'm not going to do the Nick Ferrari quiz, I'm afraid.
Politicians are removed from reality.
I know the reality that people face.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why.
they can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it.
Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees. Southeastern.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
At Lidl, find your move with a new Cribbit hiking range. Grab hiking poles for only £12.99. And with Lidl Plus, you can get £3 off windproof raincoats, so they're only £9.99. Find the full Cribbit range in store. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 28th of 2nd, 2026.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11.49 is the time. A really unexpected development in the House of Commons this morning with regards to the Peter Mandelson, the unfolding Peter Mandelson story. I'm going to be very, very cheeky and not tell you immediately what it is because Aggie Chambray will be joining us shortly, of course, to tee up PMQs, and it is a story that involves the Commons Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle. And I'll let her share the finer detail of it with you imminently. 11.50 is the time. Detecting possibly enormous frustration on my part, which I'm obviously going to take out on callers, because who else am I going to take it out on? The bin? The mug? Keith? God forbid. But we're not getting anywhere. I thought we'd finally cracked it. The phones are ringing off the hook on this. The relationship, so I probably explained it wrong again. The reason why young people don't want to go and work in supermarkets or don't want to go and do jobs that we would have considered menial in the past is because they no longer deliver security. You don't even need to look at the statistics of people in full-time education who still need universal credit to make ends meet. But when you were young, and you were doing the kind of job that perhaps you didn't think was commensurate with your sense of self or with your qualifications or your education, but you were going to do it anyway. So for me, it was working in River Island on the High Street in Worcester. And it was working in the little restaurant in Kidderminster where I would work full time in the holidays. And then when I left school, I worked full time in River Island in Worcester. And it gave me, a life. I could make my way. I could do nice things. I could buy nice things. There was enough money coming in when I finally moved to London, when I left university. I was working in a shop on Regent Street and renting a lovely flat in the middle of Bloomsbury with no money from home, working in a shop. And that's what I mean about effort and education equaling success and status. The bit that's missing from the conversation, and the bit that, and I'll take the full blame for it, the bit that many of my callers have completely missed today, is that even if you took one of these jobs that is, quotes, menial, end quotes, you would not be accessing security. You would not be able to get on the housing ladder. The men I worked with in a shop on Regent Street in the 1990s were all homeowners, the grown-ups, as opposed to my fellow youths, my fellow kids. Something severe and scandalous has happened, and this is the first generation that are unprotected from its consequences by property prices. Because even if you were earning a pittance 10, 15, 20 years ago, comparative to what you would have earned previously, your property was going up in value at such a rate of knots that you didn't get cross enough about the fact that your wages weren't. But now people who didn't get on the property ladder are finding that their employment prospects are confined to jobs that would never... How many people could buy the house they live in now on the wage they currently earn? So I wonder what the cut-off point is in terms of years, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. I could buy the house I live in now on the wage that I earned then. But the property price has gone this way and the wage has stayed more or less flat. Could you afford the property that you're in now on the wage that you currently earn? No, you couldn't. Very, very few people could. And we wonder why an entire generation of people has a look out of the window at what is available to them and either fails completely to get a job because there are so few of them, and this is going to be particularly true of graduates, and it's peculiar to Britain, so it's got nothing to do with there being too many graduates. Or they're going to say, what's the point? When the relationship between effort and reward has been so completely broken. But I guess, I mean, we're still perhaps not ready to fully accept this. We're still not ready to fully accept this. It's 11:53. Diane is in Kettering. Diane, what would you like to say?
Oh, good morning to you.
Hello, Diane.
Hello. I'm a nan, obviously, and my grandson...
Oh, you say obviously, Diane. I mean, Go on.
My grandson done a four-year course in theoretical physics.
Oh, yes.
And halfway through, it affected his mental health, because obviously it was a hard degree to get.
Yes.
He then come out and got his degree. He lived with us for about 3 months. And in that time, I have never seen a young lad apply for so many jobs and keep getting pushback. Now, we are from a working class family, so he knows that we have got everyone in our family has got a good work ethic. And he said, Nan, I can't do menial jobs. And I went, why can't you? He said, because I've sat through university and done this degree. He said, and I deserve to have the recompense to what I've learned. So I said to him, but you've got to start somewhere. I said, your sister works in McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I said, she's learnt to drive. I said, she goes on holiday, etc. I said, why are you so different? He says, because I'm better educated.
Well, he's right and wrong.
He is right. And he's wrong. I understand that. Yeah, and he's wrong, yes, because, you know, he then went on to Universal Credit. He said to me, what do I do? I said, see if you can get Universal Credit to tide you through. He went on Universal Credit, which he's probably been on for 6 months. And then they said, apply for this job, apply for that job, which he done. Nothing. He has now been offered to go to college once a week to do business management. And they have found him a work. I don't know if it's a permanent thing,
right?
But a work placement, say,
okay,
in local government, and they've offered him. They said to him, "What do you think you could do in local government?" So he said, "Well, physics is a lot about figures." He said, "I'll try finance."
Right.
So they said, "Right, okay, we're going to try and find you a job in finance in local government, or you will be doing another job finding new business." Now, he has done 4 years in university only to find out that he could have left school at 18, because I have to stay at school to 18, and he could have walked into that job or a job in local government and probably be
graduate position, but I take your central point. Does he consider this job to be forgive me, but I'm only repeating your own language back to you. I'm sure he's a lovely boy, but does he think this job is worthy of him and his education
well,
and talent?
Because I once work in local government, yeah. I think the kids of university today come out... let me put this another way, but, and I don't mean to be detrimental to anybody.
Oh, don't worry. It's one of those days, Diane. Go on.
Obviously, my grandson's from working class, and most kids are that go to university have quite well-off parents. So his
not so much
dad,
anymore.
Not so much. But
go on. But he was the first one in your family, was he? To
yeah.
Go to? Right, there
well,
you go.
No, he's the third or fourth one.
Oh, okay.
But what I'm saying is, who he was with at university, their parents were a lot better off than his parents.
Right.
So they have contacts.
But they're not getting jobs either, you see.
Well, no, I understand that. But I said to
him...
It's
quite important.
Yeah, I said to him, how many people that you were with, you know, in your little group, have jobs? And there was six of them that all shared a house,
yeah.
And four of them had jobs.
And how many of them were doing theoretical physics?
There was only three of them doing theoretical, but those other two, their parents got them a job in whatever, I don't know. So I said to him, I personally think, when I left school...
I'm going to run out of time. When you came on, I said, I'm definitely not going to be rude to Diane, because I've been rude to everybody today, but I am actually going to run out of time in a minute, Diane. So,
yeah.
Unrudely, get a blooming move on, will you?
Right, OK. Well, you think now, firms have to pay more national insurance, etc., etc. The labour market is absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
And the government... they promoted, go to university. So these kids have done what
we're back, I get it, but we're back to the fact that getting a degree is a good thing, and it's a terrible mistake to tell people that it's a passport to a job rather than an end in itself and a horizon broadening. It's a wonderful thing to use your brain in life. But some of them have been sold a bit of a pup, but that goes back decades. It's certainly not the fault of the current government, and other countries that are economically comparable to us are not suffering from what we're suffering from. But that is the seventh time I've mentioned that simple statistic today, and I've almost certainly been wasting my breath. Diane, thank you. Aggie Chambray is here. We haven't got long before PMQ's kicked off, so tell me what is going on. Shall I play the clip and then get you to explain it, or do you want to explain it and then we'll play the clip of Lindsay Hoyle?
Shall I explain it? Just to say that, of course, Peter Mandelson arrested on Monday, and it was a surprise to many people, including, I think, Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, that he had been arrested, because the Met Police had told him that they were going to interview him under caution instead of arresting him. But for some reason, he was arrested, and it seemed that the Met Police have been told that he might be a flight risk. We have now found out in the last half hour where the Met Police got that information.
Order. Members will be aware of comments in the media regarding the arrest of Lord Mandelson. To prevent any inaccurate speculation, I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility. It is regrettable this rapidly ended in the media, as this is a live investigation. Members will understand that it would not be appropriate to make any further comment, and I'd like to caution members from doing so.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't know if I've got a precedent for this, really. I can't think of another story that would be similar.
No, I think we keep having days and moments without precedent. But the Times reported in the last, hour or so, just before that statement from Lindsay Hoyle, that Lindsay Hoyle, the Commons Speaker, had visited the British Overseas Territory during recess last week. And he was informed by a local source that the former ambassador, Peter Mandelson, had planned to visit the islands. And so the Scotland Yard had then had a meeting with Lindsay Hoyle on Monday morning because he felt he was duty-bound to report that information. station, and the detectives then interviewed his source as well. And then that's why on Monday afternoon they arrested Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson. And then, of course, we had that furious statement from Peter Mandelson that went to his friends. But Emily Maitlis, our colleague on the news agents, picked that up. That's where he said, despite a previous agreement between police and my legal team over a voluntary interview in early March, police arrested me because they claimed the Lord Speaker. Now, he said the Lord Speaker. The Lord Speaker then denied it. And of course, the
Common Speaker
received information I was about to flee to the British Virgin Islands and take up permanent residence abroad, leaving Ronaldo, his husband, my family, home, and Jock, who is his dog, behind. I need hardly say complete fiction. The police were told only today they had to improvise an arrest. The question is, who or what is behind this? Well, James, in the last few minutes, we found out who and what was behind it. It was...
Well, we don't know who the source is.
We don't know who the original source is, but we know that Lindsay Hoyle...
Through which the source's information, the alleged information, allegations were passed to the police. It just gets murkier and murkier, this story, doesn't it? Which, I don't know what on earth PMQs is going to consist of today.
No, it's strange. Well, there's a few... It's one of those days where Kemi Badenoch could go on a few different topics. So... That Labour Together story, I think, is still rumbling on. And, of course, the Prime Minister has asked Laurie Magnus, who's his ethics advisor, to investigate Minister Josh Simons, who was in charge of Labour Together when they commissioned this report to look into the background of journalists, including Sunday Times journalists. And there was this message that circulated on Monday from Josh Simons. He sent it accidentally to a WhatsApp group of new intake MPs, where he said, Johnny rang, I think... Chief Whip, Johnny Reynolds. So Johnny rang, PM will ask Laurie to look into it. That's Laurie Magnus. Aim is to move fast, but PET, that's propriety and ethics, did find I'd not broken the code.
But I mean, Starmer just comes back at this and says, we are investigating it. Your lot had two ethics advisers that resigned in disgust at the Prime Minister's lack of ethics. And you tried to rescue Owen Paterson when he broke the rules by setting fire to the rule book. And you tried to protect Priti Patel when she went to Israel without telling the Prime Minister and breached the ministerial code. I mean, all of these things. He just pushes back by saying, we're doing everything by... I mean, yes, if there is any wrongdoing, we will root it out and punish it. Your lot covered up for everybody all the time, everywhere.
To which I think
doesn't
she...
Doesn't he?
Yes, possibly. I mean, that might be slightly more nimble than he is at the dispatch box. But she might respond to that. Well, look, I had nothing to do with
There's
that.
There's a new sheriff in town. I was in these governments, but I had nothing to do with anything that they did.
Exactly. You've seen this show before.
I have seen this show before.
So maybe she'll go on something where there is a bit more kind of clear blue water between the two of them. So what about... social media ban. So Kemi Badenoch reiterating yesterday her call for a ban on social media for under 16s. She had this powerful press conference actually with relatives of teenagers who died as a result of cyberbullying, and they urged the Prime Minister to act now. Ministers have launched a consultation on this and basically following the example of Australia after coming under huge pressure from ministers and a lot of backbench MPs. So he might respond, look, we're looking into this, to which she might say, well, move faster. Tuition fees as well. Kemi Badenoch came out over the weekend saying...
Hang on, let's find out. We're off. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And can I associate this side of the House with the Prime Minister's comments about Ukraine and Team GB? Yeah. Mr. Speaker, before the Prime Minister and I became MPs, parties of every colour increased the cost of going to university. The system is now at breaking point for graduates. I believe the student loans have become a debt trap. It is time for all of us to do something about it. Will he cut interest rates on student loans?
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have to say I'm glad to learn that the Leader of the Opposition has finally admitted that they scammed the country on this. And that applies to everything they did in government. We inherited their broken student loans system. We've already introduced maintenance grants to improve the situation, which they scrapped. And we will look at ways to make it fairer. And we will do other things within the economy to help students. What other things they say? The news this morning, Mr. Speaker, 7 a.m, energy bills coming down by £117. For millions of families and young people struggling, that's guaranteed money off bills in April, driven by the action that this Labour government has taken. Yeah. We promised to cut the cost of living. We are cutting the cost of living. Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I asked him if he would cut interest rates on student loans. No answer. And for the record, energy bills are still higher than when he came into office. He keeps talking about the last government. In case he hasn't noticed, my party is under new leadership. A lot of people wish his was too, including the backbenchers sitting behind him. But let's talk again about student loans and student fees even, because to win the Labour leadership, with Labour together, the Prime Minister promised to abolish tuition fees. In opposition, the Education Secretary said, graduates, you will pay less under a Labour government. I wonder what happened to those people. But can the Prime Minister tell us whether graduates are paying more or less under Labour?
Well, Prime Minister.
Certainly many in her party are under new leadership, Mr. Speaker. They're up there. The only change she's brought to her party is to make it smaller. And she talks about interest rates on loans. Mr. Speaker, not only have energy prices come down this morning, but since we were last here across the dispatch box, inflation has fallen as well, which has a huge impact on interest rates. Fallen to 3%, and the Bank of England say it's going to keep on falling. That's only happening because of the decisions that we made at the budget, opposed by the party opposite. They talk about the cost of living. This government is taking action, and under their watch, inflation was 11%, which crippled the state of finances for students as their loan rates went up.
Mr. Speaker, I'm amazed that while we're trying to talk about student loans, the Prime Minister has the cheek to talk about my party being smaller. His party is smaller too, including one MP who was arrested for child sex offences. So perhaps before he gets on his high horse, he should ask why his backbenchers are saying that they're being called the Pedo Defenders Party. So why don't we get back? I didn't say it. I know it makes them...
Sorry. Okay, let's have less. Go ahead, not.
I know they don't like it, Mr. Speaker.
Does the Honourable Member to the Loop want to leave at this stage? Just understand, I want to hear the question, because it's very important that I do hear, because I'm going to, I may have to make a judgment. So I don't need any more shouting.
I know they don't like it, Mr. Speaker, but I haven't said anything that's not true, have I? So perhaps they should get off their high horse, stop making stupid jokes, and why don't we talk about student loans? Policies that may have been fine for 2012 with low interest rates are not fine for 2026. The fact is, graduates are paying more, not less. On Monday, the schools minister was asked on the BBC why Labour froze the repayment thresholds. She said the government has, and I quote, huge pressures. Those pressures have been created by his taxes and his borrowing to pay for more welfare. Why is the Prime Minister taking from students to give to Benefit Street?
What a nerve. Under their government, student loan thresholds were frozen for 10 years. 10 years. They broke the system. They did it with a bloke over there when they're in coalition together. And we're fixing it. Now, she used to say just a few weeks ago that she was going to focus on the economy at the exclusion of everything else. So I'm doing her a favour by bringing it back to the economy, because desperate to talk about the economy, £117 off energy bills, inflation going down. The other thing that was confirmed on Friday, Mr. Speaker, borrowing is coming down, the biggest surplus on record. That means we've got the economy back under control. We're fixing the public finances. Now, I know the party of Liz Truss don't understand any of this, but she should welcome those changes when she next stands up.
Mr. Speaker, he says they're fixing the student loan system. How? He wasn't even talking about this until I raised it. The fact is, those policies...
And it goes for the role as well. Chair Select Committee, I expect a standard not to shout somebody down. Ken Bain.
Mr. Speaker,
I don't need any back chat. Ken Bain.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. He's only talking about student loans now because I raised it. He says they're fixing the problem. The fact is, he's not. Why is it that I'm willing to ditch old Conservative policies that don't work and he wants to keep them? He's not going to do anything about it at all. On Monday, they voted to increase benefits yet again. The fact is, he is taking money out of the pockets of graduates and giving it to people who are not working. It is not fair. It is not just that he is saddling graduates with debt. It's not just that he is saddling graduates with debt. Yesterday, the Bank of England, yes, where she used to work in customer services, yesterday, Mr. Speaker, the Bank of England said that his policies are fueling youth unemployment. That's not us, that's the Bank of England. For the first time ever, youth unemployment is now higher here than it is in the EU. And while he blames everyone else, our young people can't get jobs, they are losing hope and even leaving the country. Will the Prime Minister tell us how he plans to deal with it?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, she says she's ditching failed Tory policies. It's a very long list. 14 years of list. And it starts with the word sorry. And when she says that word, we'll take her seriously. But Mr. Speaker, she talks about the Bank of England. The Bank of England have reduced interest rates 6 times. We've seen the fall in energy bills. Inflation is coming down. Borrowing is coming down. She hasn't welcomed any of that. I know she wanted to talk about the economy. She wants to talk anything other than the economy. Perhaps she'll welcome the surge in retail sales as well. People are spending more on our high streets because of the action that we took. Wages boosted for millions of workers, opposed by the party opposite. Free breakfast clubs, opposed by the party opposite. Free childcare, opposed by the party opposite. Every measure we're taking to improve the economy, what do? They oppose it.
Mr. Speaker, he is desperate to talk about the last government so that he can distract from the mess that he is making now. The fact is, he is the Prime Minister today. This is a man who got legislation in to fix his own pension, just him, no one else's. He wouldn't sort out student loans for other people. He has no plan to get young people into work. He has no plan to help graduates get out of the debt trap. They can complain as much as they like. These are facts. 411 MPs, and not a single one of them has any imagination. We are the ones doing all the thinking. Yes. He has already... Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has already made 15 U-turns. Will he make another one next week at the spring statement to fix the student loans system?
She wants me to talk about this government. Bills down under this government, £117. Inflation down under this government. Surplus up, record. Resales down. She won't welcome the economic news, but the business community is welcoming the plan. Business confidence is up. The FTSE is at a record high. The President of the British Chamber of Commerce has said this is the year our economy can turn around. Her miserable strategy of talking down the economy isn't working because Labour's got a plan for Britain.
Kevin Bednall.
Mr. Speaker, it'll only turn around this year if he stops being the leader. Perhaps they can do something about that. He wants us to welcome economic news. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to welcome the fact that youth unemployment is at its highest ever. I am not going to welcome the fact that unemployment has increased every single month under this Labour government. He is not doing anything about student loans because he is not governing. And he is not governing because he cannot govern. He is distracted by Labour scandal after Labour scandal. Mr. Speaker, even today, now there is an inquiry into the inquiries minister. That is all that they have offered since they came in. The defining moment of this man's premiership will not be breakfast clubs. It will be the sight of the man he appointed as ambassador to Washington just last year getting arrested. No wonder they're calling themselves all sorts of things. He needs to stop moaning about us and start fixing his useless government. Why should the country have to put up with 3 more years of this?
Yet again, she's shown why she is so utterly irrelevant.
Hello. Please, I want to hear the question, so do your constituents, Prime Minister.
All she does is carp from the sidelines, talk the economy down, talk the country down. In the meantime, because of our work, what is happening? Energy bills down, as announced this morning. Inflation down. Borrowing down. And what's up? Retail spending is up. Investment is up. Business confidence is up. That's the difference a Labour government makes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Residents in Stanley, in my constituency, are very excited about having their say on how to spend the £20 million of Pride in Place funding that Stanley South has received as one of the 250 most deprived neighbourhoods in the country. There are other villages and areas in North Durham that are too small to qualify for Pride in Place at the moment, but also urgently in need of investment. For instance, Grange Villa, New Cayo and the Avenues area of Chesley Street. Will the Prime Minister consider an additional wave of Pride in Place funding to target smaller, more concentrated areas of deprivation?
Well, I thank him for that, and I know how meaningful Pride in Place investment is to his constituents. We're backing communities with the funding and the powers they need to invest in their priorities, which is unleashing jobs, growth and opportunity. In answer to his question, I can confirm that the next wave of Pride in Place will invest in an additional 169 neighbourhoods focused on smaller areas, looking closely at deprivation. We're reversing the austerity that ripped the heart out of our high streets and our communities and giving local people a real say over how money is spent.
Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Dean.
Can I join the Prime Minister in congratulating Team GB on our most successful Winter Olympics ever? And can I also join him in solidarity with our Ukrainian allies and friends after 4 years of them resisting Vladimir Putin's war machine? Mr. Speaker, the former Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, has raised deeply shocking concerns that Jeffrey Epstein may have used British airports and even RAF bases to traffic young women and girls in and out of our country. This is appalling. The Prime Minister knows that I agree with Gordon Brown that there needs to be a full public inquiry into all this. If he doesn't agree with Gordon Brown, will he, at the very least, commit to releasing the flight logs and related documents? Will he wait for the House to force the government to do that?
Prime Minister.
Well, I think it's important to appreciate there's obviously a police investigation going on, and I think it's right, and I'm sure he agrees with this, that that has to go wherever the evidence takes it. And we have to let that investigation run its course before deciding what next action needs to be taken.
So, Ed Davey?
Well, I think we all agree that police investigation should take priority, but that doesn't rule out a public inquiry, and it certainly doesn't rule out releasing the flight logs, which I think really should be. Mr. Speaker, on a different note, it's been revealed the trustee of William Blake House, a care home for adults with profound disabilities, embezzled £1 million. There are very few homes in the country which offer this sort of care, and now it faces closure. As a father of a disabled son myself, can I tell the Prime Minister this situation is one of my worst nightmares? It's one of the worst nightmares of many parents with disabled adult children. The families of the residents have put forward a rescue plan to take over William Blake House and run it themselves. It will require HMRC resolving the debt issue and the Charity Commission to appoint an independent board. So will the Prime Minister meet with the families and back their plan?
Prime Minister.
Can I thank him for raising this case, which is obviously a cause of considerable concern. And of course I'll make sure that the relevant meeting is put in place for all of the individuals who need that meeting.
That answer.
Mr. Speaker, given the recent challenges to the Equality Act, will the Prime Minister commit to protecting...
Oh, well, that's 20 minutes of your life you'll never get back again. We'll pick over the bones after this.
This is LBC.
Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla speed test intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern. Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where to start? I mean, that last question from Ed Davey was a reminder of just how powerful Parliament can be and how important PMQs can and should be, of course, with reference not only to that unfolding scandal involving alleged embezzlement from a care home, but also the understanding of the issue that he has as the father of a disabled son. But we must begin at the beginning with Kemi Badenoch, I don't know. Where do you start? If you stuck her on a lie detector test, it's the only redeeming feature of PMQs at the moment is how magnificently hilarious she is. If you put her on a lie detector test and said, are you the best politician ever in the history of the world? I think she would reply yes and pass the test. There are levels of self-belief there that are, frankly, utterly magnificent to watch. Utterly magnificent to watch. But anyway, how much of your predictions were right? You didn't mention student loans. I bet you're about to tell me you were about to.
I said tuition fees.
Of course you did. Rewind live radio on the Global Player. She did, actually. It's true. This is clever politics. System brought in under the last government, but tweaked, of course, by Rachel Reeves with the freezing of thresholds for Plan 2 graduates. It's very dry. She kind of got handed her homework by Martin Lewis live on the television earlier this week. But, of course, because of that thing I just referred to, that magnificent self-belief, she wouldn't even have been troubled by the money-saving expert telling her that she'd got her facts a bit wrong, because it's good politics. She's managed to staple herself to widespread and long-running calls for a rejig of the rejig.
I think that's right. And I think, to be slightly fair to her, I feel like to be the leader of any party, or indeed probably to be a politician, you've got to have buckets worth of self-belief, don't you? I mean, she possibly does have more than others, but you really have got to believe in yourself if you're going to...
Do you know what? It's really working. You know when she looks in the mirror and says, you are a strong and powerful woman, because they found the notes. It's really working. They should find out what self-help book she got that from and stick it on the cover. They sell millions of copies in a hot minute. So student loans is an interesting thing to go in on, and it is good territory for her, albeit that she didn't necessarily make as much of it as she could have done. It's a Martin Lewis campaign, this, which she has belatedly attached herself to and managed to get told off by Martin Lewis for not understanding the facts properly.
But also, why not? You know, if you're in opposition, why not come up with ideas that you might not necessarily actually ever have to pay for? So she said at the weekend that Plan 2 loans were increasingly feeling like a scam, and she said that the Conservative Party would cut the rate of interest charged on some student loans issued in the decade up to 2023. Of course, as you say, these were brought in by the coalition. But it is good politics because loads of people agree with her, not just graduates who are facing those costs, but also people on the Labour benches. And actually, I think it was a reasonably good Prime Minister's questions for Kemi Badenoch. Apart from anything else, I always think it actually works. If you've got a good topic, just stick on it for six questions. And that is good. I would say the question she asked to start with, where she basically said, will Keir Starmer cut interest rates on the debt trap of student loans? She should have just stuck with that, actually, and just carried on asking the same question, because that's when we've seen Keir Starmer slightly fall apart on that, and actually it does elicit responses maybe on the second or third go. But the thing that makes this especially good politics for Kemi Badenoch is there are loads of people on the Labour benches that actually agree with her. And there is so much frustration, James, from people I've spoken to in Labour who say, why on earth are we saying, as Rachel Reeves saying, as she did to our colleague Natasha Clark, that this system is fair? This is not a system we brought in. This is not a system we voted for back when the coalition brought it in. And we've never agreed with it. Keir Starmer said when he was in opposition still that he was going to abolish tuition fees altogether. And they just are really confused as to where this has come from. I mean, where this has come from, right, is they don't really have any money to do things with it, or they aren't willing to prioritise this at the moment. There have been some reports that ministers are looking at doing something about this, but that's why this is really uncomfortable for them. We've had people like Lucy Powell telling us actually that this system is egregious.
I think I know.
You think you know?
Yeah, I'm being serious now. You can't tell from my face. I suspect that they're on a very, very strong message to not undo anything that is currently in place. So this stems back to Rachel Reeves freezing the salary threshold for the Plan 2 loans. And I imagine that in the last 2 weeks, it's become written in stone that we're not going to backtrack or U-turn or revise or whatever you prefer to call it on anything else. Therefore, we have to defend where we are now on student loans. Rachel Reeves would be reading the tablets written in stone and deciding that is the, I don't know, entirely speculative, but I've had a few successes in the past trying to work this stuff out. A few people unhappy with the idea that was good, because the comments that she made about the Pedo Defenders Party read like something she was reading off a graffiti in a pub toilet. What on earth was that about? Do we know?
It was pretty strange, wasn't it? I mean, so she basically, Keir Starmer said your party's getting smaller, pointed at Reform UK. Good gag, actually.
True.
Well, good gag, because actually it is true. And then she said, well, Labour's getting smaller too, and says one Labour MP has left because he was arrested on child sex offences. It's no wonder some Labour say that they are described as the Pedo Protection Party. Now, in a parliamentary Labour Party meeting, Women's PLP, where Keir Starmer spoke, that was a couple of weeks ago, actually to the day, it was a couple of weeks ago, one MP did say that they were getting, a female MP did say that they were getting this on the doorstep. And actually, I've spoken to people who have said, actually earlier today, someone said they were door knocking in Doncaster and said, oh, someone only said we were the pedo protecting party once. So I think that is occasionally coming up on the doorstep.
Based on
but
what?
Who... I think on appointing Peter Mandelson,
right?
Of course,
so on the Epstein stuff,
Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
That's okay. Right. But on the who is that MP that Kemi Badenoch was talking about? I think that was Dan Norris, who's a former Labour minister. He was arrested at the back end of 2024 on suspicion of rape, sexual assault, voyeurism, and upskirting. He denies those allegations, but as soon as he was initially arrested, he was removed from the Labour Party.
Immediately. Just on arrest. And I think the police have said they're no longer investigating the allegations of child sexual offences, but are investigating the other the other allegations that you mentioned. So a very strange. I mean, it obviously plays well on Twitter, I presume. Otherwise, Badenoch wouldn't have used that phrase in the way that she did.
I think that's probably right. It's so difficult, isn't it, when you watch the Commons at the moment and then you think, oh, hang on, have they said that just because they want to clip that up and put that on social media where they know it will do well, as opposed to actually having the debates that have sometimes happened in the past? And I think, James, you were right. That was probably one of those moments.
I thought that was hideous, actually. And I mean, I was preparing to say that's good for Badenoch. She's doing really well on this. It's cynical. She's stapled herself to somebody else's campaign, but it's a good thing to be stapled to. And then that just came out of nowhere, that line, and it is absolutely hideous. I mean, it's disgusting. Keir Starmer, the Director of Public Prosecutions, pursued more prosecutions in that field than I think any of his predecessors. It's just so at odds, but I imagine, I don't even look at it anymore, but I imagine it's the kind of thing she thinks will play well in the sewer that Twitter has become since Elon Musk took over. And then Ed Davey on Russia, which is becoming something of a hobby horse for him. And I don't mean that in a negative way. We talked on the programme yesterday about our failure to be fully cognizant of the threat that that Russia is posing to the West, the head of MI6, the head of the army, all queuing up, and yet absent almost every week from PMQs until Ed Davey gets to his feet.
Yeah, so Ed Davey talking about Gordon Brown there and how Gordon Brown had highlighted Jeffrey Epstein using UK airports to traffic women and asked whether Keir
Starmer... Did he not talk about Russia? Did I imagine that? Good Lord, I've got to start paying more attention, haven't I? Just so talking about the Gordon Brown's detective work into the...
Indeed, and whether or not there should be a public inquiry, and asked if Keir Starmer thought there should be a public inquiry, which of course he batted back, and whether Starmer agrees that the flight logs should be released. Starmer said there's a public inquiry going on. And then, of course, he did talk about that horrible, awful case of the care home, the William Blake House, which is for adults with profound disabilities, which currently faces closure. And he says the families involved have put forward a rescue plan and asked if the Prime Minister would back that. The Prime Minister saying he will organise a meeting on this.
A quick introduction for Idiot's Corner. I've got like 10 messages in front of me saying racism, misogyny against Kemi is truly shocking. And then you look at it and it's all from the same number. But unfortunately, you sent it before we'd started analysing PMQs. You sent it about 20 times, mate. But the first time you sent it, she was still talking. So nobody had even started critiquing what she'd said. So accusing the people critiquing what she said of racism and misogyny only works as a lie if you wait until the people have actually started critiquing her. So it's Idiot's Corner for you, you freak. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
The Commons Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, has revealed he passed information to the Met Police about Lord Mandelson. The former US ambassador's lawyers say he was arrested on Monday because of the baseless suggestion he was planning to leave the country. The Prime Minister has told LBC he won't stop until energy bills have come down for good following a cut to the price cap. Ofgem says it will fall by 7% from April, which means the average household bill will fall by £117 a year. And a man who murdered a 9-year-old girl while she was playing in the street has been jailed for at least 25 years. Lilia Valutite was attacked by Davidas Skibas in Boston in Lincolnshire in 2022. LBC weather, dry and bright for southern and eastern England this afternoon. Cloudier elsewhere with outbreaks of rain in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
In 10 metres, take a left at the pile of washing.
Sorry, what?
At the Valley of Toy Dinosaurs, approach the kitchen with no room to cook.
Huh?
Turn right at the floor drove.
The floor drove?
You've reached chaos. Recalculating.
No,
suggest immediate course correction to IKEA for fitted wardrobes, children's storage and cupboard organisers.
Find your way back to calm. Discover smart storage at IKEA Croydon now. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Kart, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Knockhatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at knockhatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:37 is the time, and I was a bit late coming off the back of PMQs, so I don't want to curtail Simon Marks's contribution to the programme any more than I already have. Here he is. State of the Union address. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think we have to start, James, with the understanding that to some extent, in order to appreciate the audaciousness of Donald Trump's play last night, the American public was required to suspend their belief in everything that they already know about his first term in government. But that some polling also indicates overnight that that may have worked for him. Oh. I mean, you will read that this was the longest speech in State of the Union history, and indeed at an hour and 47 minutes it was. But I'm bound to say, for at least this viewer, it felt much shorter than last year's speech, which was an hour and 39 minutes, because he was actually focused, he was disciplined, he was energetic. He barely departed from his prepared text. He was completely glued to the teleprompter throughout. And this speech was a masterstroke of theatrical diversion by a made-for-television showman who, last night at least, appeared to realize that his entire future and the future of the political movement that he leads is now on the line. And the most important piece of political theater, you know, these speeches are normally not even remembered the morning after the night before. They are certainly never remembered a year after the last State of the Union address. I defy anyone that can remember what Donald Trump said last year or Joe Biden said the year before that. This speech will, I think, be remembered for a piece of political theater where, on the issue of illegal immigration and what he claims was a completely open border policy by the Biden administration, Donald Trump stood in front of the Democrats who were in front of him in the room, and remember that 80 Democrats, an unprecedented number, were boycotting the speech, but he stood in front of the Democrats in the room, and on live TV, he offered them this challenge.
So tonight I'm inviting every legislature to join with my administration in reaffirming a fundamental principle. If you agree with this statement, then stand up and show your support. The first duty of the American government is to protect American citizens, not illegal aliens. Isn't that a shame? You should be ashamed of yourself not standing up. You should be ashamed of yourself.
And he managed to goad at least two members of the Democratic caucus, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib of Michigan and Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, into screaming at him, in the case of Ilhan Omar, "You're the murderer, you're the one who should be ashamed." And this was exactly the outcome that he was looking for, revealing the Democratic Party to Americans across the country, who went into this first year of his second term backing his plans for mass deportations, but have been deeply shaken by the manner in which his mass deportation policy has been implemented. He managed to use that moment of political theater to reveal to the country that Democrats won't even agree that the duty of the American government is to protect American citizens first, a breathtaking claim by Donald Trump, given that two American citizens were gunned down by his federal agents in Minneapolis just last month. And he then managed to goad two of the most left-wing members of the Democratic Party's caucus, and of course, two Muslim American members of Congress, into screaming at him, raging at him on television, and accusing him of being a murderer. And you're going to see that clip again and again and again in Republican image making as the midterm election campaign gears up and moves into a higher swing here.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because of course they weren't necessarily, well, they obviously weren't disagreeing with what he said. They were just refusing to be part of his theatre, and by doing so they've become a much bigger and more effective part of his theatre than they would have been if they'd just sort of shuffled to their feet.
Yeah, but there were other moments as well where they did, I think, take the bait. And it was particularly when President Trump introduced to the audience one of his invited guests, a teenage girl, who, and it's a long story, had decided that she wanted to transition to become a boy, escaped from her family. The family then sued the local school board in Virginia, managed to bring her back into the family home, and she then decided not to pursue the gender transition surgery. President Trump used this as an opportunity to advance his argument that no child in the United States should be allowed to change genders without parental approval and support. And there was a moment in the speech where again he challenged the Democrats to back the law, and they were not interested in it. And he said to the American public, "They're crazy, these people. I'm telling you, they're crazy." He also made it absolutely apparent that, you know, if the Democrats are to return to power, he argued, they're going to take the country back to a Biden-esque era in which inflation is going to soar, crime is going to be rampant on the streets of America. We'll be returning to an era of anarchy and disorder. You know, the carnage that he came into office in his first term threatening, pledging to fix. And then for the international audience, I mean, if we look at the elephant in the room, I mean, the elephant in the room was really symbolized by the four Supreme Court justices who showed up for the speech, three of whom had voted against his tariffs in that landmark decision last Friday that eviscerated the central pillar of his trade, foreign and international policies. Donald Trump seemed somewhat concerned. I mean, he said that the Supreme Court decision had been very unfortunate, but then he doubled down and indicated that, as far as he's concerned, the era of protectionism is simply going to rock on here.
As time goes by, I believe the tariffs paid for by foreign countries will, like in the past, substantially replace the modern-day system of income tax, taking a great financial burden off the people that I love.
I mean, an absolutely breathtaking bit of doubling down and repeating there the complete falsehood that the tariffs are being paid for by foreign countries. They're not. His own Federal Reserve issued data within the last 10 days saying that 90% of the costs of the tariffs are being passed on to Americans in the form of higher prices. But Trump indicated he's got no plans to seek congressional approval for any of this 15% across the board tariff that he's implemented, that the statute books suggest he can only implement for 150 days. He said he had tested and approved other legal strategies that were going to other legal statutes rather that were going to allow him to keep tariffs in place. No answer, no clarity for any of America's trading partners about where all that is going, and absolutely no promise to America as importers who have paid the $150 billion in tariffs that this government has collected, that any of them is going to see a penny of that money back anytime soon.
I mean, I know it doesn't matter, and we've reflected upon this many times, but I don't think in the States you can get gender-affirming surgery without parental support, without parental permission while you're under 18 anyway, anywhere. But it doesn't matter for his base because he's making them think that their children can run off and have operations against their will.
And he wants to codify into federal law. I mean, he wants to make sure that, you know, for him, this is about tightening a loophole that really doesn't particularly exist.
Yes.
But it's mostly about creating a straw man that he is able to use very effectively. And you know, if we look at the polling overnight, and we know that yesterday there were opinion polls showing that between 60 and 63% of the country disapprove of what Donald Trump's been doing over the last year. You know, whopping numbers. 73% of independent voters say they disapprove of what Donald Trump's been up to. Well, in overnight polling, CNN has found that 64% of people who watched the speech feel the country is headed in the right direction, and that that number shifted over the course of the speech from 54% before to 64% by the time he had finished talking. Now, there are other elements in that poll that are not so welcoming for the White House. Only 38% of viewers had a very positive view of the speech by the time it was over, which Politico is reporting today is a lower score than Trump has registered in any of his previous addresses to Congress. But, you know, they will view this at the White House as the opening salvo in his efforts to try and not only bring Republicans across the finishing line in November, but in adhering Republicans to him. And I think that in some respects, he did succeed last night. You know, the enthusiasm, the cheers for him when he made various announcements were, you know, you could hear them all over the city. I mean, Republicans could not, I think, believe that this president, the man who rambled his way through that endless, more than 2-hour press conference on the first anniversary of his return to power only in January, was the same Donald Trump that had shown up last night in the well of the House of Representatives.
And he knows his base, doesn't he? He knows exactly what buttons to press. And as you say, he pressed most of them last night or yesterday. Simon, thank you. We'll probably catch up with Simon a bit more before the end of the week, maybe even a little bit more on that, but it's already 12:48, and I want next to introduce you to a gentleman who has been doing his best to resist the tidal wave and filth and lies about the capital city of these fine islands that are being propagated and disseminated all over the place online. So it's a bit of a misinformation, actually, but also a fascinating investigation in its own right, and one of the people who makes YouTube a rather more pleasant place to be than it would be in his absence.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Energy bills will fall, but are you still struggling with day-to-day costs? The voter age gap that could transform the UK, and the Chancellor on student loans.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's coming up, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Did you know HGVs have 4 zones of limited vision around them? If you're in one of these areas, you may not be seen by the driver. These 4 limited vision zones are in front, behind, and at both sides of the HGV. So when you're driving around a HGV, don't linger around them, because they may not notice you're there. Know the HGV zones. National Highways.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 12:52 nearly. I have joshed with you in the past about not being entirely sure what it is that the latest generations of content creators do. And I always cite the example of a YouTuber coming into the studio and trying to explain to me what he does. This is going back 10, 15 years. And me being none the wiser at the end of the exchange than I was at the beginning. But I exaggerate slightly for comic effect because I'm aware of some of them. And the brilliant work they do, because I've got children in the right catchment area, and they've turned me on to some of the creators that I've subsequently enjoyed enormously. And one of the first in that category is a chap called Evan Edinger. Can I tell people how we met?
Absolutely.
So I'm wandering through Gunnersbury Park during lockdown with both of my daughters, and they behave as if they've just seen Elvis Presley, except Elvis would still be alive at this point. There wasn't a sort of spookiness attached to their shock and awe. And the reason they were so excited is because they thought they had just seen one of their favourite YouTubers, namely Evan Edinger, who was in the company at the time of a very popular and successful musical artiste, but they had no eyes for her whatsoever, Evan, and it was all about you.
It felt very excellent, honestly.
Yes, exactly that. Anyway, that's not why you're here. You have joined me in feeling for your adopted city of London. I think you're American-British originally.
I'm American originally, but I've lived here now over 13 years, and I love London with all my heart.
Well, me too. I'd grow up here either. I moved here at 19. So you, like me, are both baffled and disgusted by this tidal wave of lies and filth regarding our city that is subsuming many corners of the internet. So what have you been doing about it?
Well, it's just one of those things where you see so much negative stuff about London online, and it began to make me feel like maybe my experience of London was not real or privileged in some way. And I had to ask multiple friends, like, is London really as scary as they're saying online, even though I'm out living in it every day? And then I started researching more and more and finding out that so many of the posts that were going around were either fake or dramatized or from different cities or just AI slop. And it just started making me a bit more and more upset about it all. Especially basically because, well, I live here. It's lovely. It's one of the most visited places in the entire world. And if there's, you know, disinformation going out about the city that I love and live in, I just feel like we should all be at least aware that it's not real some way.
And you introduced me to some of the performers in this space, one of whom isn't real. I mean, it's all, for people who aren't keeping up with this stuff, an entirely plausible, apparently human figure reading out with great umbrage and disgust things that they believe to be facts. I've just discovered that. I've just learned that. Mm. And it's all bilge.
Well, I think that type of person is the one that upsets me the most.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have these bots and accounts on X or Twitter that are spewing out this stuff constantly. And that's going to be a lot harder to stamp out. But it's these people that, you know, live in Britain that are happy to spread this disinformation because they make money off of it. This is the stuff that really upsets me the most, because it is just, you know, forming a career out of telling lies on the internet, and the fact that that's still allowed, and candidates also posting things on Twitter about migrants and such to scare people from London, and it just is really upsetting.
We've got one now apparently poised to run for mayor of London who buys into and disseminates a lot of the bilge and nonsense that you're talking about.
That honestly makes me feel like, if, let's just say, God forbid, one of those people wins, all of a sudden I feel like the disinformation will just turn away. We don't have a mayor named Sadiq Khan anymore, and well, London's a nice place now.
And so when you dig into this stuff, what do you discover when you dig a little deeper? And I should push people towards your channel, Evan Edinger, Edinger, and you can find, there's a 30-minute film, which is what was brought to my attention in the first place, where you just peel back the lid, really, on what's actually going on under the surface.
So from what I've discovered, for the most part, there is just a large financial incentive on platforms like X to basically post things that people will share. Things that get shared the most are negative things about popular things. And also, essentially, Twitter/X is now promoting more right-wing populism ideas, as is in the algorithm. And so when this stuff gets posted, people get monetized, it spreads really fast, it spreads within Britain, and then people just believe it, and they share it because it matches the form of reality that they currently believe in. This also goes along the way with freedom of speech issues. You know, we get so many, even my family in the U.S. ask me questions like, oh, aren't you afraid of, like, the police coming to your door? I have to be like, no, that's, where are you hearing that? And it's right-wing news in the States is saying all this type of stuff.
Because it's leached off the internet and into like borderline legacy media discourse. The idea that you could get into trouble for freedom of speech based issues here more than you could in Russia, I think I saw someone saying recently.
We don't have to verify it anymore. No. You just have to say, I saw it on the internet. And then people go, well, that's good. You can now be absolved of any sort of journalistic integrity. You just say you saw it.
What, was there a moment where you thought, okay, this has moved out of my world? And obviously you don't spend your life online, but this matters now. This is going to start influencing elections. This is influencing foreign policy. This is influencing tourism figures. This isn't just some freaky racists online telling racist lies, which has been going on in various formats since time immemorial.
Well, yes, the thing is, this is happening in real life, and this does have a splash over it. All these negative ideas, even if it's people that normally wouldn't believe them, the more you see them little by little, the way I argue it is, if you're on these short-form content apps and you're just slowly flipping through, even if it's just for 2 seconds, if you see something about knife crime, if you see something about this stuff about London being bad, even if you normally wouldn't believe it, there's part of you that's going to go, actually, I do. And then you might act on that in real life.
And when we clip this up later, as we will, because that's how it works, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The replies you'll be able to see, and leave this in the clip, will all be telling Evan and I live in Brentford. Can I ask where you live? Is that, or roughly?
Oh, yeah, I live in East London.
East London. So I live in West London in a very multicultural and diverse and not particularly wealthy, but I have a very nice house area. And
I live in the no-go zone.
Evan lives in an alleged no-go zone. And you'll see in the replies to this that people in, well, I don't know, anywhere from Bucharest to Bristol will be insisting that we know nothing, we know nothing, and that you know that this is true because a man on the internet told you. It's not even a beginning of an exaggeration. You can see it now in the reply. Well, actually, maybe they won't be in the replies because now I've caught, so maybe we should leave this out and then do a follow-up later, do a director's cut of it. I should add that you're also very funny. I mean, you do the British versus American stuff, which is your sort of original.
That's my original niche, yeah.
USP. Tell us just a little bit more about that, because you've already got quite a lot of fans who listen to both of us. So Evan.
Nice.
Well done for getting him on. I love Evan. He's brilliant, from Clare in Rugby. Hi, Evan. Keep up the good work. Stu says, I'm a 72-year-old Scot. Say hi from me. I've been a fan for years. Tell us a little bit about the meat and drink of your online activity.
Well, basically, I've been making videos since university in the States. And once I moved to the UK, you know, there was just so many little things I noticed that I thought were really interesting. I'd have conversations with friends at the pub and be like, oh, you don't have this at school? And so I was like, well, I'd love to just maybe record one of those conversations, put it on YouTube. And it did really well. I didn't expect this. And then that just became a thing. And after lockdown, when you couldn't collab with anyone, I then had to kind of change my style. And essentially, I was trying to do that, but more deep research. So finding out more of the intricate details on why certain things are
Ah, and that brings us to where we are today. Something Very Strange Is Happening to London is the title of the film that Evan has made with regard to the hideous misrepresentation of our capital city by people who hilariously like to describe themselves as patriots. I'm out of time, Evan. It's great to see you. Evan Edinger, as I say, E-D-I-N-G-E-R. And now at 4 o'clock on LBC, it's Tom Sorbitt, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed. Great to see you in person. I've followed your stuff. Definitely, it's great.
Woo!
And now I think we'll get your name right. I've been pronouncing it with a soft G. Edinger.
They're both fine.
Good to know. Well, it was the subject that led Prime Minister's questions, and Rachel Reeves is speaking later to Joseph Draper, LBC's Joseph Draper, about a number of things, including student loans. She called it fair and reasonable, the system that we have. I wonder whether she still feels the same. At two, we'll talk about the appeal of the Green Party. Zach Polanski saying last year migration is our superpower. Looks like he means it, as his party looks to offer an amnesty for even illegal immigrants. But I'm going to start with those energy bills coming down in April. The Prime Minister was at pains to say things are getting better in PMQs, wasn't he? Are they? Are they getting better, or are you? I'm going to go old Theresa May. Are you just about managing?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Commons Speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, has told MPs he passed information to the Met Police before Peter Mandelson was arrested.
I'd like to confirm that upon receipt of information that I felt it was relevant, I passed this on to the Metropolitan Police in good faith, as is my duty and responsibility.
Yesterday, Lord Mandelson's lawyers say he was detained due to the baseless suggestion he was planning to leave the country. They say he had already arranged a voluntary interview and his overriding priority is to cooperate with police and clear his name. Mandelson was arrested over claims he passed information to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary. Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC he won't stop until energy bills have come down for good. The regulator Ofgem is cutting its price cap by 7% from April, following decisions made in the budget. It means the average household bill in Great Britain will fall by £117 a year. Dara Vias is the chief executive of industry group Energy UK.
The reality is whilst money's been taken off the bills on the policy costs, at the same time network costs are increasing to support some really crucial investments in the system. Some of our infrastructure hasn't been updated since the 1960s. We need to continue to electrify our economy.
A man who murdered a 9-year-old girl while she was playing in the street outside her mum's shop has been jailed for at least 25 years. Lilia Valutite was attacked by Davidas Skibas, who's 26, in Boston in Lincolnshire in July 2022. A man's been arrested after allegedly entering a mosque in Manchester carrying weapons, including an axe. The suspect is believed to have gone into the building in the Victoria Park area last night with another man who hasn't been detained. And visitors to the UK need an electronic travel authorisation, or ETA, from today. The digital permission costs £16 and allows multiple journeys of up to 6 months over 2 years. Those without one won't be able to board their flight, ferry or train. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 100 points at 10,780. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and bright for southern and eastern England this afternoon. Cloudier elsewhere without breaks of rain in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
OK, James, I need you to do a few more drops than yesterday, I'm afraid.
Carl needs to find another driver for his expanding courier business. Someone who'll really help to lighten the load.
Any issues, give me a call.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do.
South today, what about you?
Indeed helps you quickly attract, screen and virtually interview great candidates. All through an easy-to-use dashboard. To start hiring, visit Indeed.com/try today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. The Prime Minister was at pains in the House of Commons on a number of occasions, actually, to try to get the message across that in his view, and he was quoting statistics as well, saying that our economy is starting to turn around. Now, the degree to which that trickles down to you and I is a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it? And that, I suppose, is the question I want to talk to you about today, not least because we learned today that typical household energy bills will fall by 7% in April, on average around 117-ish pounds a year, which week by week, month by month, doesn't amount to a massive amount of money, does it? But still, if it goes down, it goes down, and we welcome that. But I want to get a sense from you this hour, not just about energy bills, but about bills more generally. How are you managing? Are you just about managing still? Because we are some years off now, aren't we, from the depth of those energy prices and that package of support that came in 2022. And yet we know that food prices have been very sticky, haven't they, and very high. And inflation, yes, it's coming down, but that only means prices going up more slowly. It doesn't mean prices are necessarily coming down in a big noticeable way. So I want to get a sense of what changes you have been forced to make and what you are facing when it comes to your bills. 0345 6060973. Not just energy bills, your bills more generally. 84850, the number to text. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband, as you might have heard, came on with Nick Ferrari at breakfast today to discuss the announcement this morning that the energy price cap will be lowered by £117 annually, that is, by April.
We said bills will be up to £300 lower by 2030 as a result of our clean power mission and other things that we're doing. And that's what we're determined to do. We've got to get away from this era of people opening their energy bill each month or each quarter with kind of horror. And, you know, I think of somebody I met in my own constituency, Nick, a few months back, an old lady, and she said, look, for the last 4 years, which was actually since sort of Russia invaded Ukraine, actually, we've only been able to have the heating on 3 hours a day.
Right.
And you know, we've got to change that. We cannot live in a country where that happens. And you know, that is the that's why it's important what we're doing today.
But we live in a country where they're putting bars of chocolates in security boxes, Mr. Miliband. I hear what you're trying to do with energy bills, and £10 is £10, but we've got security blocks on chocolate and cheese in this country. What are you doing? Not you personally, what the government doing about that?
Because of the scale of the crisis that people are facing, you're saying?
Yes. The prices aren't coming. You've done what you can. Many would say 10 quid's not enough. But if you go into the supermarket, your constituents, my listeners, your people, good folk of Doncaster North, when they go through Morrison's or Asda, and they think, I heard Ed Miliband. It's just not what they see on the shelves, Mr. Miliband.
No, look, it's true. And let me say this to you. I think this dates back probably 18 years to the financial crisis. I mean, it's ever since the financial crisis.
What, the price of chocolate?
No. Ever since the financial crisis of 2008, people have been facing a long-term affordability crisis. And look across the board at what we're doing. Raising the minimum wage to help people. Taking action on childcare to help people.
It doesn't feel like that in Morrison's and Asda, though. Do you know the price of a Mars bar?
I'm not going to get into a quiz questions with you.
Politicians are so removed from reality. You don't know the price of a Mars bar.
I'm not going to do the Nick Ferrari quiz, I'm afraid.
He refused to do the Nick Ferrari quiz. I've recently seen those sort of plastic chocolate blocks in the supermarket next to the train station I use most days. They're a reality, aren't they? I haven't seen it on cheese yet, but certainly on chocolate bars. Well, Sir Keir Starmer battled the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch at PMQs on the state of the country's economy. That was in the past hour. Let's take a listen to some of that.
The President of the British Chamber of Commerce has said this is the year our economy can turn around. Her miserable strategy of talking down the economy isn't working because Labour's got a plan for Britain.
Can it be not?
Mr. Speaker, it'll only turn around this year if he stops being the leader. Perhaps they can do something about that. He wants us to welcome economic news. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to welcome the fact that youth unemployment is at its highest ever. I am not going to welcome the fact that unemployment has increased every single month under this Labour government. He is not doing...